Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. Read us where we're able. We'll routine to border scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
But if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
saying wrong. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
Morning, the most news in the morning, period. Weekday 6 Eastern.
You want to try me? You want to try me tonight? You think you have a bad night? I will ruin your f***ing night. You want to try me? Do you want to try me, young boy? You want to try me tonight, young boy? You want to go to jail for some reason I come up with? You want to see who knows the law better? Me or you?
The officer was suspended after that tape was posted on YouTube and Google. Brett Darrow is the man who was behind the wheel who had rigged up that camera, and he joins me now from St. Louis. Brett, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Were you scared when the officer started screaming at you?
Yeah, I was extremely scared. I thought I might get hurt or assaulted. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Let's listen to a little bit more of the confrontation. This is with Sergeant James Kenline.
Ever get smart mouth with a cop again, I show you what a cop does. You understand me? Try and talk back. Talk back to me again. And I bet I say you resisted arrest or something. You want to come up with something? I come up with 9 things.
So he appears to be saying he's going to make up charges against you. Your decision at that point was to put this video onto the internet so that others could see it and hear it for themselves. Did you try to go to the police and say, this is what happened to me?
Well, actually, I kind of just posted it among friends, and a couple of friends spread it out over the internet, and people were so outraged, and I had so much support that it just basically took off on its own. I didn't have to do anything. I woke up one morning, and it was everywhere.
This officer has since been put on unpaid suspension right now, condemned by his supervisors. But let's answer a couple of the questions he asked you before the tirade. He was saying, what are you doing in a commuter parking lot at 2 o'clock in the morning? What were you doing there?
I was meeting up with my friend to get my cell phone that I left at their house. I just pulled in there. It's a 24-hour commuter lot. I figured that it wouldn't be suspicious, but the officer thought otherwise, I guess.
And then you didn't immediately give him your ID. Why didn't you just do it since it was, 2 o'clock in the morning and you were there by yourself?
Well, when he asked me for it, I started to get it out. And as I was getting out of my wallet, I asked him, had I done something wrong? If there was a problem, if they were looking for someone, I wanted to help, figure out what was going on.
And why did you have the dash cam in the first place?
Well, actually, about a year and a half ago, I got a traffic ticket. I didn't think I deserved it. There was really no way for me to prove my side. I thought, well, what better way than to have video evidence if I get another one ever again? And I guess it helped out this time.
All right, but real quick, before we let you go, let's just hear a little bit more of this confrontation.
I might give you a ticket for that. When we come up with some more, when you turned in, you failed to use your turn signal, the right turn signal. Want to try me some more? Huh? Come on, smart. Give me an attitude a little bit more. I bet you I can guarantee I tow this car by the time I'm done.
Do you think that unpaid suspension is enough? What would you like to see happen to this officer?
I like to see the officer fired. I thought what his conduct was ridiculous, and now the patrol car video is missing. The chief can't find it, so I think this officer needs to be fired.
Did you end up getting a ticket?
No, actually, I think he realized that with my camera that he would just escalate the situation more by giving me a ticket or arresting me.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table on www.shazizradio.com. If you'd like to join in on the chat, just jump over there to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html. That's ought to be a pretty interesting show. It's kind of a personal show, considering the kind of life that I've led in my time. You know, start off by saying that I know firsthand what it's like to live in fear. I'm 50 years old, and for at least the first 19 years of my life, I lived in fear. And the rest of the 50 years, I lived as a chronically paranoid individual. Now, I won't go into graphic detail about exactly what all occurred in my life, but I can tell you from experience that I've seen a lot of things in my life. And so if you ever wondered why Old Shaziz is always trying to preach peace, hope, and love, there's several good reasons why. One of which, I know what it's like to be bullied, and I know what it's like to be beat up and assaulted and attacked and so on and so forth. But I was born on an astrological sign, Libra. Ironically enough, that symbol is the scales of justice there, you know. And it seems like that the most of my life, I've always tried to keep that balance. I've always wanted everything to be fair for everybody. I wanted everybody to have equal amounts of food, you know. I wanted everybody to share things and take care of each other. But in the process of all that, and I'm watching as the world goes around, and I'm seeing that life isn't always fair. The balances of justice, the scales of justice, are either tipped one way or the other. And so with that said, today's show don't really have a title on it outside of defense. You know, using Big Brother's tactics against the police caught in the act is one of the things there. An anti-taser protection is another thing I'd like to talk about. And down at the bottom of I posted some links over here at the shazizradio.com/superchat.html, some videos for you to watch. And, you know, dangerous times that we live in. These are the beginning subjects of the round table that I'd like to lead off with, and hopefully that you'll get some sort of good information out of it, maybe some understanding of why it's so important that we keep doing what it is that we're doing. There's a lot of things occurring in this world today that just ain't right, you know. And I want to first off saying that I'm not anti-police. I'm not even anti-government. I'm anti-corruption. I'm pro-constitution. I believe that the rights that we've been given came from our Creator. And so with that said, you know, freedom and justice for all is what I believe in. Peace, hope, and love. Now, I mentioned that I spent the first probably 19 years of my life living in fear. And so that started me off on a journey that got me into self-defense. It got me into learning every single possible way that there was to hurt a person. Martial arts techniques and just all in all out any kind of fighting and defense and whatever. But, hey Thomas, could you mute your mic? I did keyboard tapping. Thanks, brother.
Hey, I'm spreading the word, man.
Yeah, spread the word.
I'm just trying not to do it by, you know, yakking at them while we're you're trying to, you know, have a monologue moment there.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, I'm just...
Do you have your supervillain hat on?
No, I've tried to pop a superhero suit on.
You can't do a proper monologue if you don't have your supervillain hat on, because, you know, it's always a supervillain that does a monologue.
All right, well, I got my imaginary supervillain hat on. Anyway, back to what I was saying. I spent the first probably 19 years of my life living in fear, and portion of that I spent approximately 13 years studying every single way there was to hurt a person, every single self-defense that I could get my hands on. I read books, I watched movies, I had instruction. I did whatever I could do to learn how to defend myself against bullies attacking me. And, you know, a certain incident occurred, you know, back when I was in the military that caused me, it basically changed my life for the rest of my life. It caused me some serious brain injury, that short-term memory loss and so on and so forth. But after all of this stuff that I went through in all my life and watching the modern day age and all the things that are going on today and the way that, you know, people are acting towards each other, and, you know, I've seen a lot of videos. I've seen a lot of videos of bullies beating each other up, beating people up, and I've seen police out of control. I've seen, you know, just average Joe out of control, intoxicated or whatever. You know, and I've seen, you know, the terrorist, all the terrorist videos out there, people always trying to do something bad to each other, you know, cops and robbers styles and all this stuff. And keep in mind, I'm a chronically paranoid individual that started off whenever I was a youngster as just plain fear, because I was a little guy and I didn't know how to fight and I didn't know how to defend myself, you know, I was kind of roughed up as a child. And so the older I got and the more aware of the injustice of it all, I started to study everything I could to potentially hurt a person who tried to attack me. And keep in mind, even after all the lessons that I learned and all the techniques that I learned on how to defend myself, I still was afraid. And to this very day, if I get pulled over by a police officer, I've had a few police officers actually ask me, "Why are you so nervous?" Well, it's because I got a man with a gun standing outside my door that could potentially cause me some financial harm or physical harm, or, you know, mess up my driver's license or whatever, you know. And so I have pretty good justification for, you know, being nervous. You know, I don't want anything bad to happen to me.
What you should be saying to them is, well, isn't that the intent of carrying the gun and openly showing it and, you know, showing force in your voice and whatnot?
Yeah.
Isn't that your intent to make me afraid? Does it make you nervous that I'm afraid? Because if it's making you nervous that I'm afraid, then you're probably in the wrong job, because that's kind of what they expect you to do, is go around and intimidate people. So when you see someone intimidated, if you're a police officer, then I guess you should think, I'm doing my job.
Well, intimidation's a good point there. I'm glad you brought that up, because believe it or not, I was a police officer for 2.5 years, all right? And I got to see the system from the inside out. And I saw how it worked. And one time, whenever I was applying for another position in a small town, the mayor actually told me that they were going to hire the sheriff's department because they looked more intimidating than I would in a regular, you know, police uniform. Because
was he trying to call you Barney Fife?
Well, pretty much that's what it boils down to. But essentially, the sheriff's department, they wear khaki pants. They're militarized looking, and they do look intimidating. They look like, you know, you don't want to mess with them. Now, you know, Barney Fife of the deal, one bullet in the pocket scenario, you know, it just it doesn't have the same oomph, if you know what I mean, when it comes to, you know, intimidating individuals into doing, you know, complying to what they want to do.
Man, I'm wondering if they're running around wearing tactical black SWAT uniforms now, then.
Well, yeah, they are. And, you know, here's the thing. As a police officer, I have to tell you that those were the 2.5 of the most paranoid, fearful years of my life. And I wasn't afraid of the criminals. I was afraid of the cops because I actually got to see inside and out how small systems work inside, from the inside out, and how, you know, the buddy-buddy system goes, the blue line, so to speak, you know. And if you're not on the right side of that line, if you're trying to be an honest guy out there in the system that is corrupt and you're trying to do the right thing, you're going to find that a majority of the police officers who start off with good intentions end up being bad cops because they have to bend on their morals, so to speak, in order to try to self-preservation. It's not a good deal, all right? And it's sad that the communities have turned from what normally was serve and protect to now basically armed revenue generators for the state. Now, once again, I'm not anti-police. I'm sure that somewhere out there, there are good police officers. But I have very rarely ever seen a police officer that I can literally say was, you know, a good police officer that didn't violate my rights in any way, that was respectful and polite. Now, I have had instances where I've talked to some police officers that were, you know, reasonably tolerable. But that's way before I ever even knew everything that there was to know about my rights, you know, what I can and can't do, what they can and can't do to me, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, as my life went on, the older I got, the more paranoid I got. I am literally flat out afraid to leave my house, all right? I have spent many, many years as close to home as I could possibly go. And the only time I ever venture out is if I got either somebody with me or I'm going to some place that I can feel comfortable, that, you know, I can just kind of stay away from the crowd. You know, I'm not antisocial. I just don't do well with large crowds unless I'm surrounded by individuals that I can trust, that, you know, could watch my back or, you know, or keep me. See, it's not just the fear of the people out there, it's the fear of myself. You know, because of all the training that I had in self-defense, I'm afraid of what I would do to react to a situation that got out of hand. I don't want to spend time in jail. I'm severely claustrophobic, and if I was ever get locked up in jail, that would literally be a death sentence to me because I would go flat out insane. All right, and they couldn't put me in the general population because I just couldn't cope with people that being around me like that. So, you know, I try to stay out of trouble. I try to stay within the law. I try to be as respectful to everybody out there that I possibly can. You know, I want to leave a good impression. The best time to leave the best impression is the first time you meet somebody and the last time you meet them. And those are the things that they're going to remember you by. And so if you stay consistent in the way that you act towards the individuals, then, you know, you pretty much build up a good reputation as a good person. And you know, if you're going to be a good person, you gotta live that way. And so, you know, moving right along, if you ever come in contact with the police officers, I want to give you some advice that I hope that you let sink into you. Number one, the very first thing that you never, ever, ever want to do is, well, there's a bunch of things you don't want to do. One of which is actually talk to the police as much as little as you possibly can. You don't, you're not required to answer questions in certain parts of the world. So they're there to start a case against you. So everything you say is going to be, according to the Supreme Court here in the United States, is if the police officer says it's testimony. If you say it, it's hearsay. And hearsay is not admissible in court. So, you know, the very first thing that you want to remember is never, ever, ever raise your voice at a police officer. Because, number one, they're trained to escalate power for power. They will bring it up a level higher than you. They're going to always bring, whether it be a level of force higher or a level of verbal higher, they're going to be keeping control of that situation at all times. And so while you're nervous and they're escalating and you're escalating, it will just completely get out of hand and to the point where next thing you know, you're either hurt or off to jail, and the police officer will win. So the thing is, you don't want to argue with them. arguing with them on the side of the road is the worst thing to do. You're not going to convince them that you have constitutional rights. They don't care. Even though that they swore an oath to serve and protect and uphold the Constitution, they don't care. And they fall under an umbrella that pretty much states that whatever they do out there on the side of the road, as long as they're within the law and they have the reasonable belief that they're doing the right thing, that they're justified in their actions by doing whatever it is that they do. And so you do not want to argue with them. You don't want to sit there and have a debate whether or not it was right or wrong for them to pull you over. Just basically, they are there strictly. They're part of the executive branch of government, and their only duty is to enforce the laws that they know about. And they should know about all the laws, and they should enforce them fairly and equally in a perfect world, but that's not the way it usually happens. So, as the executive branch of government, they don't care about your rights. They don't care about whether there's going to be justice on the side of the road or anything like that. All they care about is enforcing the law. If they feel like you're in violation of the law, they will escalate it as high as necessary according to your actions. So you never want to argue with them. You never want to raise your voice at them. You want to use a calm voice at them and comply with giving them whatever information you are legally required to give them. Now, if you step outside the bounds and don't want to answer certain questions, or you don't want to give them consent to search your vehicle or your person or whatever, then you got to understand that these guys are going to get frustrated, and they're going to, that it's a power thing. It's literally, they're going to get frustrated, and they're going to escalate on their side a little bit. And so you're going to need to always remain calm, and no matter how upset that officer gets, you stay calm, and you don't escalate it by raising your voice at them, because it's already a tense portion of the deal. And that's how 99.9% of all the bad things end up going off at police stops or anything like that, because the police officers, they're not attorneys. All right, they think they're doing everything according to their job description, and they think they're doing towards the law, with the exception of those individuals like the one video where the guy is literally pointing a gun at a man's head trying to force him back into his car after he already made it up to his door and he was just being dropped off at home. There's many, many, many videos out there that show police brutality and police overstepping their bounds. And there's also videos out there that on the opposite side of the spectrum, where people out there in protest or whatever escalated the scene to the point where the police are going to win. All right. Number one, they got the authority and they got the mindset that they will come in with overwhelming force and they will mop you if that's what it takes. Now, outside of a full-blown revolution where every single buddy out there decides that they're going to come up against the law and you got an all-in-all-out war, which I do not recommend and I do not promote, you know, I never want to advocate violence. But outside of that, the police are always going to win. They got the power of the government behind them. They got the power of the corporations and they're armed, and they have body armor. They have everything that you don't have. So that brings me to the point of this video. The point of this video is that for the scales of justice to be balanced out, the average Joe needs to start learning about defending themselves. You know, I don't want to go outside these doors. I don't want to leave my property. I want to stay home, because as long as I'm home, I don't have to deal with the average Joe out there that might freak out on me because he's on drugs or don't like the way I look or the way I'm dressed, or a police officer pulling me over because my tag light might be out on my vehicle, or there might be dirt on my license plate, or just any reason to try to generate revenue for the state. I don't want to give the judge my money. I don't want to give the police officer my time. I just want to stay as far away from them as I can possibly stay away from. I don't want to go near the military bases. I don't want to go near any courtroom. I don't want to go near any government. And just for fun, remind me later, I'm going to tell you how to get out of jury duty, Thomas. It's really easy.
All right.
All right, don't let me forget that, because it's a funny story. Alright, well, anyway, so the purpose of this broadcast is, and I hope you share this with everybody out there, because it's really important. You know, when you look at all these different weapons that the police officers have that they call non-lethal weapons, you know, I'm like this. You know, this is my body, all right? This is my soul, my spirit, my life, and I don't feel like anybody has the authority to breach that. If I'm not directly attacking somebody, because I say I don't want to get on the filthy ground, you know, I don't want to lay down on that dang street because there might have been somebody spitting there. Somebody might have vomited there, you know. I'm a germaphobe. I don't like to get nasty stuff on me. And so why would I want to lay face down on the ground so somebody can come up there and twist my arm behind my back and handcuff me and take me off to jail? You know, I could turn around peacefully and allow them to handcuff me and just say, look, if you're going to handcuff me, here, do it peacefully and put me in the back of your car where I can't get in, I'm locked up or whatever, and let's just not fight about this, but I'm not getting on that filthy ground. Well, about the time you say that, then they'll whip out the old taser there, and they'll blast you with a taser and send about 10 to 50,000 volts through your body, which could potentially cause a heart attack in some individuals because of the strength of their heart. There are potential side effects to being essentially electrocuted. All right, well, there are videos out there, and ironically enough, one of them is a video where police officers have taser-proof shirts. You can see them when they shoot these tasers at people that the police officer's not even budging outside the little pane of the darts that are sticking in their skin that have little barbs like fish hooks so that they don't come back out, and if they're really painful to get out. They have shirts, jackets, and hats, and gloves that will defend against taser. Because if a bad guy gets a hold of a taser and tases a cop, well, then the bad guy can get the cop's gun and do him in. So, you know, they don't want you to know that they've got these things, but they got them for defense against that particular deal. They have Kevlar bulletproof vests, and, you know, some of them have flak jackets. And so, you know, with that said, the police, because they're, you know, out there in the public and they're carrying guns and they might have to come up against bad guys, they have all the best defense. They have armor, all right? And the average Joe does not. You watch the protesters out there, whenever the police come up, the police have really good gas masks that will filter out the pepper spray or whatever style gas that they decide to use to basically cause the person to submit, but the average Joe doesn't have a gas mask. And in some communities, Kevlar vest, it's illegal for you to be able to have a doggone bulletproof vest. Because under the guise you might be a bad guy and the cops might need to shoot you, they don't want you to have a bulletproof vest. So, you know, there's kind of a double standard there. They're going to be protected from the weapons that they're going to use on you, but then on the same hand, they don't want you to be protected against the weapons that they're going to use on you. So, there's a video out here, a couple video links that are posted over there at the superchat.html where it actually shows some people using tasers on taser-proof and taser-resistant materials and stuff like that. You got to think that a taser is going to send out two prongs out there, and even though these two prongs are twisting amongst each other, they still have to be able to create a path through to, you know, put that electricity into your body. Now, number one, if you have some decent, thick enough clothes, it won't go all the way through to your skin, but that's, you know, they're pretty strong. I think they're being shot with compressed nitrogen out of the kind of like the old CO2 BB gun canisters cartridges, and so those are being shot out. They're sticking in your through your clothes and into your skin, and then that electricity makes a path through there and shocks you with about 50,000 volts. And so the way that these guys are defeating it are using things like carbon materials and kind of like the chain mail that they use for fencing to keep you from getting scratched or poked or whatever. And basically that sends that electricity back into itself, it shorts it out, doesn't allow the energy to transfer to your body. So, it's my belief that you have the right to defend yourself. And if these guys are going to use this kind of stuff on you, you know, if I had my way, I'd have a full-on dog-proof, bullet-proof, taser-proof, gas-proof suit of armor that any time I left this house, I'd look like doggone Robo-Dude or something like that, you know? Because, you know, it's just not safe out there. If it's bad enough, you supposedly have to worry about the terrorist. You got to worry about the bad guy, the criminal, and then you got to worry about the bad cops to boot on that. And then you got to worry about the military, the federal government, and you know, so on and so forth. All these different agencies that are out there supposedly to serve and protect, to defend the country. You're better off just staying home, man. That's what
I want to say. The description that we get from the people that you're talking about that are supposed to be defending us brings to mind the phrase, with friends like you, who needs enemies?
My point exactly. That's like I said, Thomas, I'm not anti-cop. I'm not anti-government. I'm anti-corruption and I'm pro-constitution because I believe that that constitution, regardless of what people think or how we got it, whether criminals or not criminals are the ones that founded this country, I don't care how that constitution got there. That constitution is the only thing that stands between us and a tyrannical government. Now, when they swear an oath to serve and protect and uphold the laws of the land and the Constitution and your rights, then that should be, you know, back in my day when I was younger, my grandfather used to say that a man's word's like gold. And it once you get a reputation that your word ain't worth the spit that it took to get it out of your mouth, well, then essentially, you're just a worthless individual because nobody's ever going to trust you. If you're ever in need, nobody's going to believe you. You know, they're not going to loan you something or help you out because you lied to them all the time or you never kept your word. So you got to keep your word as gold. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, what I hope that people take away from this broadcast is that, you know, number one, don't try to fight with the police. Don't go over there and start yelling in their face and telling them about the Constitution and all that kind of stuff because they're going to beat you up, you know? And the moment you so much as accidentally touch them, just so much as a touch, an unauthorized touch of a police officer is assault according to the law, and you will go to jail for assault. And so, with that said, you want to keep your distance. You want to keep your hands back. See, it's crazy that when you're driving down the road, a police officer comes up to your car. Because of his fear, you have to make sure that you put your hands up in plain sight. Because he's already, from the time he stopped you, he's already looking for a reason to get you. He's already looking for any potential danger. They actually, whenever they walk up to your car, they actually put their fingerprints and their handprint on the back of your car so that they can ensure that if you run, that they can find your car. If anything happens, that they got your fingerprints right there on the back of the car that says that officer was stopping that car. Now, maybe I'm not supposed to say that, but I'm just at a point, I'm 50 years old, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be on this earth. But these people out here that are supposedly there to serve and protect, when it gets to the point where they're no longer serving and protecting, they just become armed revenue generators for the state, it's my firm belief that you have the right to defend yourself against tyrannical systems. You know, so with that said, there needs to be a market out there for taser-proof shirts. There needs to be a market out there. This one individual, he built him an inflatable shirt. That's one of the videos I posted in there where it shows that whenever he's got this vest on, this guy's hitting him with a bat, he's hitting him with a taser, and as long as he gets hit in that area where that vest is at, he's perfectly fine. You know, and he wants to protest in peace, but he knows that the police are going to take their batons against him, they're going to take tasers against him, you know. And so, if you're going to go out there and you're going to try to peacefully protest, then you need to be dressed up in battle gear like one of them red man suits.
If you're going to peacefully protest, you have to be ready to defend yourself against violence.
Yeah. And that's a shame.
That's a shame.
That's a doggone shame that you can't even peacefully protest without fear of your government, you know? And there's a lot of brave individuals. I keep thinking about this one video where I saw this guy standing in China in front of some military tanks. He's just standing there protesting in front of the military tanks. Now, in some countries, the military just run you right over. They don't care. You know, you don't have no rights. But reminded me also of a video where a little girl was standing up against the U.S. military. She was standing right out there, you know, trying to ask them why they're there to hurt them, you know. And people get to the point where their own life doesn't matter anymore. They're just so frustrated with the entire system and all the violence and craziness going on that they're willing to put themselves on the line, you know. Go ahead, shoot me. I'm done, you know. And so what? You know, what are you going to gain? You, the bully that beats up the little guy. Go ahead, beat me up. Get it over with, you know. I'll go home and cry, and then I'll just go on about my life. You know, what kind of world do you want to leave behind for your children? I'm always preaching peace, hope, and love. I've seen things that no man or woman should ever have to see. And I'm going to tell you, folks, it's not pretty. Some of the things that go on in this world are worse than a Stephen King movie. Alright? And I'm not saying this to make you afraid. What I'm saying this for is to put a bit of awareness in you that you understand that you have the right to take care of yourself. You have the right to defend yourself. You know, sometimes the police will get so far out of hand, they call it police brutality, where the police escalate it beyond the level of the legalities of the whole deal. You know, you can only match force with force and then just a little bit more in order to take control. But when it gets down to where the bully's already beat up, and then you're over there stomping on his head and kicking him in the face, now you become the aggressor. If you used enough legal force in order to defend yourself and try to get away as much as possible, try to de-escalate the fight, try to walk away. If you have to run away, so what? You know, nobody wins in a fight. Neither side. Because you just morally damaged yourself, you know, when you're defending yourself. When you keep yourself on that moral high ground. Then you can walk away understanding that you did everything you could to potentially de-escalate the situation so that nobody got hurt. That's the kind of lifestyle that I lead. You know, I don't want to fight with nobody. I'm afraid to fight with somebody. Can you add Raymond to the call? I'm afraid that if I'm forced into a corner, then I'm going to do something that's going to cost me jail time. Or worse.
Hey, good morning, boss.
You're live on the air, Raymond. Let me finish my point here.
Sure.
I'm afraid that if I'm pushed in the corner, that I'm going to do something that I'm not going to either A, be proud of, or that's going to get me thrown in jail. So my preference is to stay as far away from crowds of people and as far away from law enforcement and as far away from the military and the government and the courts. I don't want no part of them. I just want to live out in my little piece of land out here and just stay here as much as possible. And when I do have to venture out, I like to take somebody with me so I got some sort of comfort sitting there beside me that, you know, they're going to watch my back and I'm going to watch theirs. Safety in numbers kind of a thing. When I do venture out by myself, I don't put myself in positions where I could potentially be in danger. I watch and I observe. And that's what a lot of people don't do when they're out there in the public. They don't pay attention to who's in Walmart or who's in the store. If you ever go to a restaurant with me, Raymond, you have. If you ever go to a restaurant with me, you'll notice that I always position myself with a with a wall to my back to where I can see everybody out there that's around me. And
I've been with you, and I did see that.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the self-preservation, self-defense kind of deal. I always want to be aware of my surroundings. When it comes to police officers out there, folks, don't try to escalate it. Always try to de-escalate it. Try to talk calmly. Give them the information you're legally required. Try not to talk to them as much as possible, because according to the way that the law is set up, when the time they stop you, they can lie to you. They can flat out tell you a lie, whatever they want to say to get evidence from you. Their testimony in court is testimony. Your words in court is hearsay. That's why they always tell you, anything you say or do can and will be held against you in a court of law. They will tell you that right out the gate. So from the time they stop you, they're building a case on you. So whatever comes out of your mouth is what's going to be going down in that report. And according to the court, if it's not written on paper in the report, it never occurred. So everything else is hearsay. So you might want to start writing your own doggone reports and having somebody witness it and just keep it
video recording. Yeah, being uploaded immediately online as you're recording it, streaming online.
Exactly.
Right. That way there's no chance they can grab it and destroy the evidence.
And so, you know, with that said, the purpose of this video or this podcast, this show here, is to kind of put you in a state of mind to where you're going to stay observant. You know, I dress like I'm ready for war, right? Because I feel like I'm living in a war zone. When I go out there and the police officer asks me if I'm nervous, why are you so nervous? Well, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, well, I got a man with a gun standing outside my car here that wants to either get some money out of me or take me to jail and take away my freedom or violate my rights. I don't know what his intentions are.
That's just it right there. You don't know him. You have no idea who he is. If that was your next door neighbor that worked for the police department and you knew him and went and played bridge with him and whatnot, would you be nervous when he stopped you?
No, but I'd kind of be...
Exactly. You knew him then at that point. This is a complete stranger. The fact that he's wearing a uniform does not preclude him from being some sort of psychopath that's there to seriously injure you or hurt you. Heck, you don't even know if he's really a police officer. They had incidents where people were dressing up in police uniforms and had decorated their vehicles down in Dallas that were stopping women and raping them.
Yep.
And they were literally, they had to issue a warning, said if the police are flagging you over to pull you over, do not pull over in a lone area. Proceed to the nearest location where you have people around you and whatnot that you can safely pull over, or just drive ahead of them until you get to a police station and stop at a police station.
Yeah, and one of the things that I would advise you is to make sure that you turn your flashers on, drive slowly. All right, mm-hmm. And get on the phone and call up 911 and tell them, look, I got a person behind me that may or may not be a police officer. I'm in fear for my safety, so I'm going to proceed somewhere where there's a lot of people around, and I want you to confirm that this person behind me is a police officer, because they will do things. If they're a real police officer, if they believe that you're trying to get away from them, they will do things like the pit maneuver, where they will literally ram the back corner of your car and force your car around, which causes your car to stall because of the centrifugal force on your transaxles and stuff that basically yep. binds up your engine. They will ram you. You know, that's what those big bumpers are on the front of their doggone cars. You know, and worst case scenario, they'll pull out in front of you and hit the brakes and jump out with their gun pointing it in your face. And if you keep proceeding, they will actually fire through the windshield of your car. You know, you go out there on YouTube, you can see all these videos of people that made the wrong move towards cops and it went wrong. I don't advocate any violence against the cops, or I don't advocate the cops being violence against the people. People got to slow down, they got to calm down, they got to keep their mindset that you want to make sure that you are the peaceful one in that deal, and you de-escalate it by the tone of your voice. Because they will raise their voice up a level higher than your voice at all times. They will raise the force up against you a higher level at all times. And some cops out there that either for whatever reason, either adrenaline junkies or, you know, steroid freaks or basically just all in all like jerks that want to have a power trip on you, they will use excessive force. And in the process, you end up getting yourself hurt. So the worst time to talk to the police officer is on the side of the road. Do it in court where there's a bunch of witnesses around. You know?
Exactly.
That's the safest way to go. But as far as these taser-proof suits out there, I believe they should be mainstream market. The police officer's wearing a t-shirt that literally has the taser has absolutely no effect on it. All right, they got carbon fibers in them, or they got some sort of mesh designed into the actual, woven into the material, so that when the prongs go through there, it shorts the taser out, and they're ineffective. Now, if I could find a place, I would buy them myself, and believe me, B, I would wear them 24/7. I may even actually try to build my own version of it, you know, using some thin metal window screening and sewing it within the layers of my clothing, because I don't know when a police officer might think I'm trying to intimidate him, or when I might make an error that he decides he's going to tase me and throw me on the ground and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to get on the ground. I'm not going to lay down on a concrete floor so somebody can come over and handcuff me. That somebody might have spit down there. They might have vomited or worse down there. You know, I'm a germ freak. I'm not laying in the dirt. I say, if you want to arrest me, then I will peacefully put my hands behind my back, and you can lock me up in your handcuffs and throw me in the back seat of your car, and then we'll talk about it. But I'm not laying in the dirt. You know, I'm not a dog. And that's what, you know, people don't seem to get out there, is these folks sometimes, they treat you like a criminal, even if you're not a criminal. They treat you like a dog, even if you're not a dog. And, you know, in my book, the scales of justice ain't right when that's going on. What gives them the authority outside of enforcing the law for a hardcore criminal to treat people the way that they do? Well, fact of the matter is, you give them the authority. The government gives them the authority. And there's always some sort of law that will protect the police officer in his action. As long as he is in reasonable belief that he's doing the right thing, he's not in trouble. And the courts will back him up. And his word in court is testimony. Your word in court is hearsay. Unless you're answering a direct question from the judge, which in some courts you listen to them how they talk, they will literally twist your words around, and the prosecuting attorney will object to how you spoke your words, you know. If you don't know how to talk in court, my God, you're gonna get tore up. That's all there is to it, you know. So you need to be knowledgeable about your rights. But you don't need to be argumentative on the side of the road with the lawman, because he's going to do you wrong. And for everything that he can escalate on you, that's more and more charges to the point where it's a felony, and now they start cutting into your constitutional rights.
Stay away from the borders.
Yeah.
They extended, what, like 100 miles from every border of the United States to where basically Border Patrol could just pull you over, and you there's no constitution there. It's suspended in that area.
Yep.
So that means that they can do whatever they want.
There you go, man. So, Raymond, you've heard a little bit of what I said here. What's your thoughts on the situation?
Well, actually, both of you guys are cons. And to really enter into this conversation, I would like to be on the pro side. I agree with you guys, both of you. You're right. You're 100% right. But, so the listeners will get the true story, then let me be the pro advocate. Okay,
you can be that, but let me make one statement before we go any further. I want to repeat this. I am not anti-cop. I'm sure there are good cops out there. I'm not anti-government. I'm anti-corruption and pro-constitution and pro-self-defense.
And he's an ex-police officer. And I understand that, and I understand exactly what you're doing, but you're both of you are so con that people might think you're not, you're just exactly what you said you're not.
You're trying to end the bias.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can respect that.
In this July the 15th of this year, I will turn 72 years old. I have been stopped by the police more than a dozen times in my lifetime, and I have never, ever had one be belligerently. Now, wait a minute. I've had a couple that started off belligerent, but within less than a minute, they calmed right down. Why? Because if I was guilty of what they stopped me for, I accepted it. I talked decent to them. I called them sir. You don't have to call me sir. You're way older than I am. Yes, I do have to call you sir because you are a police officer and I want to show respect.
Okay. And that's a good form of defense by de-escalating it with the tone of your voice and showing respect. That's a good way to de-escalate the tension that the officer's got. And this is what I'm trying to point out.
Exactly. You know, in fact, the very last time I got stopped by a police officer was about 3 months ago. And about a quarter of a mile from where I live, there's a stop sign. And I have lived here for over 28 years. I have never one time ever not stopped at that stop sign except then. That was my very first time. And I slowed down. I mean, super slow. I mean, a slug could outrun me. But I did not stop. And I made a right-hand turn, and so help me, there he was 100 yards away, sitting on the side of the road. When I turned, I said, oh my God. He got out of his car, walked out in the middle of the road. I drove up to him. I stopped. He walked up to the truck. I rolled the window down, and I was laughing. I mean, I was laughing so hard. I almost had tears in my eyes. And he looked at me. It was very strange. I said, would you believe I've lived here for 28 years, and that is the very first time I have ever run that stop sign, and you've got to be standing right here watching me. And I started laughing, and he just started grinning like crazy. So I pulled over the side of the road, and he wrote me a ticket. I mean, you know, I thanked him for the ticket. I was guilty.
Yeah, okay. Well, and that's a great story in the way that you handled yourself in the process. But there are misperceptions that go out there sometimes that some people aren't even aware of. Did you know that a person who is diabetic can literally smell like they're intoxicated with their breath?
Oh, yeah, and act like it. They go into a seizure. They will look like they're on, and act like they're on drugs.
Yeah. Yes. Well, sometimes, unfortunately, those individuals will find themselves in positions to where they're trying to tell the police officer that, you know, they're not intoxicated, they're diabetic, and they're having problems, and things will go awry because they're not in their 100% right mind. When you're diabetic and you're going through that particular situation, everything's not as clear as it could be.
Sure is. Wait a minute. When a person is in that position, then they're not of mind to tell a police officer that. And the police officer doesn't know. So they're giving you've got a pro and a con on this one.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is there.
Right.
If you've been diabetic long enough, you know the signs that are coming on. And it's all a timing issue. If you're already going into shock or whatever, it's too late by that time. And then the cop will recognize that something seriously is wrong. But there have been incidents out there where people would literally smell like they have been drinking, but they haven't. They're just having a diabetic deal going on.
Exactly. Now, that's a good argument there. A good argument. In other words, what you're trying to say is the police officers should be trained to notice the difference.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing. See, what really goes wrong at any given situation, police stop, or even protest for that matter, is somebody's perception of what's actually occurring there. You know, everybody's got their own point of view on what's happening. Well, the communication's going to be the key, and police officers are well trained in communications, but sometimes that gets lost up in the excitement or the adrenaline of the whole mess, you know.
Yeah, okay.
When a police officer gets tunnel vision, are you familiar with tunnel vision?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Tunnel vision could be a dangerous thing, not just for the guy that's in the bullseye, but for, you know, the police officer himself, because he's not completely aware of his surrounding. He's focused in on the actual act of what he's doing right now. And so this is why I'm saying the best time to nip all this in the bud is before it even gets to that point. You know, before the tunnel vision goes in and the cop's 100% focused on you, because somebody could get hurt. You know, when you're in a high-speed pursuit and you've got tunnel vision going on, you got to shake it loose, and you got to shake it loose fast, because if you don't, somebody will come across the doggone crossroad and they will blindside you, and you'll either kill them or they'll kill you, one of the two, in a terrible car crash. So you got to... You, as a police officer, you got to be trained enough to where you can recognize that you're actually going into tunnel vision and you're directly focused on something. You got to move your head around and keep things aware of your surroundings. And if you watch most of these police videos and chases that people are in, the guy who's trying to get away from the cop, he's got tunnel vision too, because all he's trying to do is get the heck away.
Right.
And he wrecks because he don't see something coming his way. You know?
You know, one time I was on the job, and the company that I worked for sent word. They called the office, the field office on the job site, and had the superintendent come up and tell me to call them. So I called them. Okay, to make a long story short, they said I was supposed to call the police department. Well, I called the police department, and they said, Mr. Hill, we need you to come in and so we can talk to you. I said, well, I'm about 30 minutes away from finishing this job. I said, as soon as I get done, I'll come in. Oh, Mr. Head, we need you to come in right now. I said, wait a minute. What's this about? Oh, we can't tell you over the phone. I said, whoa. If you cannot tell me over the phone, then it cannot be that important that my company has to lose money because I have to stop what I'm doing to come in. Now, you either tell me what it is, or I'm going to finish the job, and then I'm going to come in. But I have no idea what the problem is, and you won't tell me. Oh, Mr. Head, do you realize we could send a patrol officer out there to pick you up? I said, yeah, you could, but where I am, it's going to take you 45 minutes to get here, and by the time he gets here, I'm going to be 15 minutes toward you. I said, now, do you want to waste the county's time in sending and for the gasoline and the man's time to come out here and get me out? I'm not going to be here. I said, I'm going to finish this job, and then I'm coming in. Now, you do whatever you think you have to do, or you tell me how what you need, because if it's important enough, I will stop. Mr. Hayes, go ahead and finish the job and come on in. I said, thank you. So I went in, and I go into the police office, and I say, I'm Raymond Head, and I was told to come in. Okay, Mr. Head, sit down right there. I sat there for 45 minutes. I'm over there. Hey, what's the problem? I mean, you know, could somebody, I'm sitting here on company time. Well, Mr. Head, there's a warrant for your arrest. I said, really? For what? Uh-oh, we can't tell you that. I said, whatever you think you can, I'll be back, okay? I'm going back in and turn the company truck in. Oh, you can't do that. I said, what are you going to do, shoot me? And I said, look, at least let me just walk outside and tell my helper to take the truck and go on back to work. And then whenever you guys figure, finally, decide to tell me something, I'll call my wife and have her come get me. Mr. Head, we can't let you go outside. Then pull your pistol and shoot me because I'm going. Mr. Head, we'll have to send an officer with you as an escort. I said, good. Pick one with a good attitude, all right? I'd like to hear a dirty joke. So police officer walked out and said, I'll go with you, Mr. Head. We walk out and told, hey, David, I have no idea what these people are after. They're so secretive as hell. All I know is I need to sit here and find out what's going on. Take the truck and go on back to work. Tell the boss to cut my time off and, you know, whatever time we left the job. Anyway, I went back in. I sat there for another hour. This is in Princess Anne County in Virginia. A Norfolk cop comes in, tells me, Mr. Head, I need you to come with me. And I said, okay. I get up, stand up. Of course, they had told me I was under arrest. I said, aren't you going to put handcuffs on me? He said, you plan on running? I said, no. He said, then I don't need handcuffs. He said, I'd do more handcuffs that way. And we both just laughed like crazy. Got in the car, went all the way from Prince of Sand County to Norfolk, Virginia. And they still didn't tell me. I mean, I asked him. He didn't know. Lo and behold, they booked me in, throw me in jail all the time. I'm laughing. I mean, I have no idea what it was I did wrong. Nothing to be arrested. They arrested me, booked me, put me in jail, put me in a cell by myself. And I'm in there for a couple of hours. Finally, I just start banging on the door, and the trustee, which is a prisoner that he trusts, running around free outside of a cell, comes up and says, can I help you? I said, yeah, man. I said, do I get something to eat? I said, you know, they arrested me at noon. I didn't have a chance to eat. He said, well, it's after 12 o'clock. You're just out of luck. I said, no, I'm not. He looked at me and said, what? I said, you tell them up the front desk when they come back here and I'm not here, tell them to go across the street to the restaurant. I said, I am a construction worker. I build these high big things, and I've already looked around, and there's no way in the world that I can't be out of here in 10 minutes. I said, now I'm hungry, and I'm going to eat. And I can look out the window and see a restaurant across the street. Now, if somebody don't bring me something to eat, now, I'm going to be across the street in 10 minutes eating, and I will be back when I get through. He said, well, just wait a minute. So next thing you know, he brings me a bologna sandwich. I mean, you don't get belligerent. And I didn't say it mean. I just told him, I said, look, man, facts are facts. I'm hungry. You're going to feed me. You lock me up right at lunchtime. Book me in. By the time I got booked in, everybody else is eating. I haven't? We ain't going. We ain't going to get it. Come to find out, it was a case of mistaken identity. I had a beard. And I lived in a neighborhood where some guy with a beard would go around knocking on doors of men that work at the night and harassing their wives. And the guy that put out the warrant against me, he worked at night. He did not know that I was the only man in the entire project that had a beard. So he assumed it was me. The thing is, 3 days before he squat the warrant, there was a guy that moved into the same neighborhood with a beard. Come to find out, while I was in jail, before my wife came to pick me up at night, the same guy with the beard went to the same house of the man that threw out the warrant against me and harassed his wife.
Well, I'm sure there's probably several innocent people up in the jailhouse. And like I said, I want to point out once again, I'm not anti-police. All right, I'm not anti-government. I'm anti-corruption.
Exactly.
And the scales of justice are off balance. I feel that the average Joe has the right to defend themselves.
All right. I am not trying to say that there are not bad policemen out there. Okay, I'm not trying to say that. What I'm trying to say is, for every bad one, there's over 200 good ones that will break their necks.
Well,
will break their own arm just to help you.
I'm hoping that your numbers are right, okay? But once again, you got to factor in there are different areas. You know, there's let's take Kansas City for example. Those guys down there and gals down there, they're in a war zone. Literally, they have to be pretty brutal, but sometimes they're excessively brutal, and you know they're trained pretty much. If you're living in a big city where it's a high crime area, and you're going into neighborhoods where you don't know where one guy the difference between one guy and next as far as attitude and danger level, then you have to be prepared for all things. But at some point, it gets to the point where they're almost like paranoid themselves. They're almost,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly, she says. Exactly. If the police officer is working in a high crime area, he has to be on the defensive. How could he not be? I mean, you're on the defensive all the time, but you live in an area where there's very little crime. Why? Why are you on the defensive?
Well,
I said a little defensiveness is necessary because you never know when some outsiders are going to come into your neighborhood. But everybody around you is not trying to hurt you.
It's a long story, Raymond, but if you could actually follow me through the events of my life, you'd understand why I'm the way that I am, you know.
I spent 5 days with you, and I do know why you're on the fence, and you are correct. Because things that happened in your life, you are absolutely correct. I won't go into them. It's not necessary, and it's your business.
I just preach peace, hope, and love because I don't want to see things escalate. I've seen what happens when things escalate. And so the purpose of this broadcast isn't to try to fear-monger people into hating the police or hating the government or being scared or paranoid, because that's no way to live. Believe me, I know. I'm 50 years old. I know what it's like to live in fear and paranoia. It's a terrible thing.
Yes, it is.
And I want people to understand that there are means that you can take in order to defend yourself, you know?
The very first thing any person should possibly do once confronted by the police is instantly go into calm. I mean, nothing will defuse a bad situation faster than somebody that's really super calm and respectful. Now, if you're calm and respectful, and they don't calm down within 30 to 40 seconds, you got a situation. And that's when you need to get defensive, but not physically, not verbally. You need to start paying attention to what's going on around you.
Yeah, and you got to understand that the way that the laws are set up to protect these officers is so much as accidentally brushing your hand across them can be perceived as an assault.
Okay, perfect. Perfect example of what you just said. Brushing your hand. I didn't even brush my hand across my hair or my thighs or nothing. I got stopped by the police, pulled in the first place I could get off the road, and it just happened to be behind a commercial building. And it was a wide, very wide alleyway. Got out of my truck and started walking toward the police car. The policeman was out. By the time I got out, he started to get out. By the time I got back to the back of my truck, he was out. Placed his hand on his revolver, his right hand, his left hand went up in there and said, stop, right there. So I stopped. He said, sir, could you do me a favor and remove that knife that's on your hip? Well, I carried a big hip knife at that time. And it, okay, no problem. It was in a leather case. I snapped it, picked it out with two fingers, and placed it on the bumper of my truck. And then I stepped about 5 or 6 feet away to the right-hand side. He said, thank you. He took his hand off his pistol. I said, what was that all about? He said, I just had one of my fellow officers get stabbed by a guy with a hip knife. He said, some people practice. They can open that, pull the knife out and open it and stab you faster than you can reach your revolver. I said, wow.
It's true.
I really love that. I will do that. You know, so, but in other words, it had happened. So, yeah, and he explained it to me, and I understood. No big deal. You know, him putting his hand on his revolver didn't bother me a bit, because he didn't pull it out. Well, I pulled my knife out on his request and placed it, on somewhere out of the way, and I got the way away from it. And again, I was guilty. I had a burnout tail light, brake light. So we left. He looked me up a ticket. And it was a warning ticket because I was very respectful, kept saying, sir, kept my voice calm, and he wrote me up a warning ticket. Didn't cost me a dime. And we sat there for over 20 minutes after he wrote the ticket, talking personal stuff. I mean, casual conversation, almost like friends. You know, when a police officer stops you, instantly go into super calm mode, super respectful mode. You can defuse any bad situation. Almost.
Well, we've got a media and a television, movie
circus.
Yeah, circus going on out there that literally in some incidents, justifies being violent and literally, you know, looks like a guns and violence and all kinds of stuff going on. While on the same hand, we got the other side of the media always talking about anti-gun this and anti-gun that and terrorist this and terrorist that. So all day long, every single day, not only are people promoting violence, but they're rejecting it in the same breath and basically confusing the average Joe. I mean, kids growing up playing first-person shooter games, and then all these school shootings that supposedly occur throughout the world. You know, regardless of whether they're, you know, according to conspiracy, false flags or not. That, regardless of all that, it's, you know, you teach people how to treat you, and if you're continuously saying that this is okay, you can cuss in front of me all the time, you can tell racist jokes in front of me all the time, well, then they think that that's cool, all right? Well, society has been so desensitized to violence and disrespect towards one another. You know, there was a time when a man would get totally took him behind the woodshed and beat toothless for calling a woman some of the words that they say right out in the open, you know, to women these days. Because there's a difference in respect that from your generation, Raymond, and my generation to the modern day generations coming out, people aren't the same, they don't have the same morality. And I believe that the mainstream media and all, and even the alternative media for that matter, and a lot of the entertainment industry out there pretty much desensitized people into thinking, oh, well, you know, it's freedom of speech, so I just drop my F-bombs anywhere I want. You know, if you don't like it, then don't listen to me. Well, the point I'm trying to make with all that is that society has gotten to the point where they're telling you on one hand to be afraid. They're telling you on the other hand to not be violent, you know, and it's all conflicting with each other, if you understand what I'm trying to point out here.
I understand completely.
All right, so the cop's perception of the bad guy is that the bad guy is always going to try to shoot at him and fight with him, and so he's on guard, where the civilian is thinking, part of the cops are good, part of the cops are bad, and it's like playing Russian roulette. I don't know which one I've got here standing next to me this time around. So I'm in fear, I'm nervous, and the cop's wondering why I'm nervous, because I must be up to no good, because he perceives that nervousness means guilt. You see what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So it's the communication between you and the officer that's going to be the key. And when you talk about staying calm and de-escalating it, that's what I'm trying to point out. That's the biggest portion of self-defense when it comes to this. On the side of the road's not the time to argue. Out there in the courthouse, you know, even the court system's going to be corrupt. Sometimes you're going to get charged with things you didn't even do. You know, it's unfortunate the way this system works. And if the system was like in a perfect world, there would be truth and justice all the way around, and they would weed out these bad cops and they would put them in jail instead of just maybe suspending them, or, you know, even firing them and allowing them to go work somewhere else. You know, it's those scales of justice thing that I've been talking about here. And like going back to the taser, all right? They call them non-lethal, but they aren't non-painful, and they can be lethal.
You know, it just dawned on me, something happened to me about, oh, it must have been about 40-something years ago. I was in a tavern, pub, bar, whatever you want to call it, in the daytime on a Sunday with a couple of friends, and we were having a couple of beers. Well, my buddy, my friend, male, and his girlfriend and myself. Well, he got up and went to play pool with some other guy. I'm not a big pool shooter. But I'm sitting there talking to his girlfriend, and all of a sudden, the door just slams open, and I mean, this mountain with legs was standing in the doorway looking around. I mean, this dude was huge. Well, I got up and walked over to the bar to go get a beer for me and my buddy's girlfriend. I'm standing at the bar. This guy walks over. You know he is looking for trouble. He walked straight up to me, reached around, grabbed the back of my head, and shoved my nose against his. And he said, "You want a fist fight, have sex, or throw dynamite?" and with my nose mashed against his, I said, "Sir, to tell you the honest truth, I'm just not into physical sports." He looked straight in my eyes, started laughing like crazy, put his arm around my waist, picked me up, and said, "Bartender, give me and my buddy a beer."
Well,
that's a true story, honest. I swear, I've got my right hand is up in the air. I swear, it is a true story.
I believe it. Anyway, I think that there ought to be a market out there for self-defense clothing. You know, I don't believe that those tasers are. I don't believe you should be used. I don't think they should be used on people unless worst case scenario, where you know you ain't got no choice but to put somebody down. But I've seen incidents where people are, you know, peacefully protesting, maybe being a little bit loud, and suddenly the taser comes out and somebody's zapping them to the ground. And what Thomas and I talked about earlier, if you can't peacefully protest without being inside of a suit of armor, and you're fear your government to the point where you got to have some sort of battle gear on just to be out there, gas mask, flak jacket, taser proof clothing, and all that kind of stuff, then we've got a serious problem within the system. You know, you're not supposed to fear your government. Your government's supposed to fear you. They're supposed to be there to serve you and protect. They're supposed to be public servants. And the lines between the judicial, the legislative, and the executive branch of government have gotten so blurred that the Constitution, it's almost like it's not non-existent anymore. Thomas mentioned earlier about the border checkpoints. 100 miles in away from the border, they got border checkpoints. And now asking American citizens, what country of origin are you from? Well, shouldn't that be best off served if it was actually on the border? You know, it's obvious that if somebody's already in the country, you know, with certain exceptions, the majority of those individuals are American citizens.
Yes, sir. I agree.
So, I want to say, in Nazi Germany, the Holocaust, the events that we consider the Holocaust, was legal. Slavery was legal not too long in our history. Colonialism was legal. Legality is not a matter of power, not justice.
Yep.
Just because they say it's legal to do something doesn't mean it's right.
Well, and that's why I say about taser-proof clothes and the scales of justice. Because, you know, if I have the potential of being tasered by an officer who wants me to lay on a filthy ground and I'm a germ freak and he don't know I'm a germ freak, I don't want spit or vomit or worse on me by laying on some filthy ground, you know, and I will peacefully turn around if I'm under arrest and allow him to handcuff me without, you know, causing any kind of ruckus or anything like that. But how do you tell somebody on the side of the road that, look, I'm not laying on that filthy ground, you know, because they'll tase you. You're going down.
Then lean over the hood of your vehicle.
Well, whatever it takes. I'm just trying to point out just an example. There's so many different directions in which this could turn and go either completely wrong or completely right. And so it's going to be up to the individual to use wisdom and restraint to not allow themselves to get angry even when the officer's angry. Because every bit of escalation, officers are trained to match force with a touch more force. You know, they're going to escalate it to a point where they can't total control at all times. And
that's the whole point, is that any threat from a government official is ultimately a death threat.
Yep.
You either do what we say or we will kill you.
Well, then do what they say.
Well, and what if they're telling you to do something like, you know, slam your children against the ground and beat the crap out of them?
Why would they do that?
Well,
they did it in Nazi Germany. And this is the thing. Hold on. This is the thing. Nazi Germany did not start out as a Holocaust. People let it go. Nobody spoke out and said, "Hey, wait a minute. You guys are going too far. We have, at some point, got to have the right to say, no, you don't get to kill me for not listening to what you have to say, because what you're saying is wrong, and there are enough of us that say this is wrong, so we must be right."
That's right, and that's why I point out Barney Fife. Barney Fife, he's always shouting, nip it in the bud, nip it in the bud. Yep. That's what that United States Constitution supposedly represents, is nipping it in the bud. When you go back to any original contract, when two people agreed, okay, this is the contract, these are the rules we're going to follow by. Well, when this country was founded, that Constitution was a contract. Those were the rules that the government and the people decided. This is the boundary line. And here in the modern-day time, we've allowed them to encroach across that boundary line to where they're actually in breach of contract of the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Now, keep in mind that if agreed upon, they can go back and they can edit the Constitution with the proper procedure, such as going through Congress and Senate and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, doing it through the legislative branch of government. And then the judicial branch of government, they're not there to write laws. They're only there to interpret the laws. But you see evidence where the Supreme Court or even lower courts are actually legislating from the bench, which is illegal. It's against the Constitution. They're not, that is the separation of powers. They don't have the authority to write laws from the bench. They only have the authority to say, okay, this is what I believe that this law represents, and that puts a precedence down for future court cases. And so, with that said, if you lose those separation of powers, and you don't speak out like we're speaking out now against the executive branch of government or legislative or the judicial branch of government, and those lines get blurred, it comes a point when that Constitution becomes invisible and it's no longer a deal. And then there you go. When you get to that point, that's when things like what's the first document, 1776, the Declaration of Independence, all right?
Right.
That's the worst case scenario. It gets down to the point where a government has become so tyrannical that groups of individuals gather up and they agree on a Declaration of Independence, which essentially means we're going to war against you if you don't leave us alone.
Well, and this is the thing, is that, you know, liberty, everybody thinks that liberty is just something that, you know, you live in, you swim in, it's always there. No. Liberty's like a relationship with somebody who's constantly, tenaciously fighting against you. You have to work to maintain it.
Yep, and you
just like your breath. Just like your breath. The air doesn't just come in to your lungs on its own and give you oxygen. You have to pull it in. You have to fight to get it.
And
every
you
day.
Teach people how to treat you. And if you teach the government that it's all right for them to tase you or beat you toothless or pepper spray you, you know, you supposedly have the right to protest and peacefully assemble, and then when those boundary lines are crossed because some corporation says, I don't want them standing there, so, you know, do what you got to do, and then you get pushed off into little zones where these are protest zones where you're nowhere near the place where you're trying to protest, there's something wrong with that picture. You see what we're saying?
Well, and like I said, you know, They're pushing for basically police officers to wear body cams and be shown what they're doing and everything every step of the way. But nobody's talking about, because, I mean, each officer that's out there, while they might be incredibly dangerous to an individual that they're facing off with, they're not dangerous to an entire populace the way, say, the president or a congressman is. So we need to put body cams on all those people.
Well, I agree.
We need to start at the top and work our way down. The police officers are probably the last ones that we really need any body cams on. We need to start at the top and put these other people. You know, like I said, I keep trying to point this out. They are public servants. We are private citizens. So why are we being publicly videotaped and recorded and wiretapped on our phones and everything while they're getting to you know, privately do things behind closed doors that we never get to see?
Well, my point exactly is,
we need to flip the camera, you know?
And even the example that I laid down about police have taser-proof clothing and bulletproof vests, now, that's not for the average Joe. You know, they want to be able to shoot you and tase you. That's their self-defense, you know? But once again, they don't want it turned back around on them.
Shazette,
yeah.
In defense of my wanting to be pro, I don't know how you find these statistics, but I do know they're there to prove that I am right in that not every cop is bad.
Well, and I'm not saying that, Raymond.
Wait, let me finish. To prove just what I'm trying to say. Did you know that nationwide in the United States, 3 out of 5 police officers that are shot on the line of duty are shot with their own revolver?
Well, I can believe it.
How could that happen? If so many cops are bad, how could that happen?
Actually, I'd say that's a different sort of bad. That's called incompetence.
Well, no, not necessarily, because that's the reason why they have taser-proof clothing, is because if the weapon gets turned around on them, then that kind of scenario can come about. So,
right. Well, that's why they don't carry armor-piercing rounds in the police's pistols. If they don't have to pierce through armor, then, you know, they can wear the armor and make sure that if their gun is used on them, it won't pierce through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, how did the person get the police officer's gun? Maybe he wasn't fast enough, didn't realize that this belligerent person that he's arguing with, so he didn't try to defend himself.
Well, okay. Once again,
now we're getting to the point where Chavez is right. The police officer must at all times, and if he fails, they're going to get his gun, but he must defuse a bad situation by overpowering. He must control the situation by overpowering, because his calmness is not going to work every time, especially right. If it's a super belligerent person.
Well, yeah, somebody that's been repeatedly told that it's us versus them, us versus them, us versus them.
Yeah.
So they literally believe this, and they go crazy and attack the next police officer they see.
There you go.
This is about, what, like I said, fighting for that liberty on a daily basis. It's not a physical fight. It starts with a mental fight. You have to get up. You have to, you know, basically do some investigation. You have to learn. You have to sharpen your wit. You have to actually know what you're doing before you start, you know.
The best way to use any situation with a superior person is to be calm and respectful.
Well, it all boils down to personal responsibility. No matter, everyone's responsible for their own actions. And when you got mainstream media and entertainment industries and even the music industries, whatever, all these people out there glorifying, violence, F the police, and so on and so forth, and you start building a culture where people don't trust the police. And even the good police, they don't trust the police.
Exactly.
When I was a police officer, I lost a lot of friends because of that job title. All right, because people, nobody wants to hang around somebody who could potentially hear the wrong thing or see the wrong thing and throw them in jail. You know, it wasn't pleasant. I did not enjoy, not for a minute, not even for a brief second. I never enjoyed that job. It was for me mostly. It was research. And when it all come down to it, I wasn't satisfied with the way that it came out. But the key to the whole deal is that if society keeps doing what they're doing as far as glorifying and making people afraid of the system that is supposedly there to keep civilization together, there is a definite need for the executive branch of government to enforce laws to ensure that criminals don't do things. But like Thomas said, it's a continuous non-violent battle, a battle of minds in order to keep your freedoms, because if you don't, then the lines get crossed. You get corrupt officers out there.
It's a continuous battle to keep it from becoming nonviolent. Because if you let something go long enough, if you don't clean your house and you let it go long enough, eventually the only way to clean that house is to burn it down.
Yeah, pretty much.
So let's keep it clean so we don't have to burn it down in the first place.
Raymond mentioned something quite some time back. I can't remember his exact, so I'm just going to paraphrase. But it's essentially the equivalence of putting one bad apple in the group. You know, the one bad apple makes the whole doggone batch go bad if you leave it alone. Well, that's a true statement.
A bushel of good apples will not turn a bad apple good, but the bad apple will turn every apple in the
bushel. Right. The worms in it will get out and go into every single apple and spread until they're all infected. And I mean, you know, this is the thing, man. The first thing you can probably look at to indicate that there's a problem with your legal system, which is going to infect and destroy the people who enforce the law, because they're now being forced to enforce laws that are not they're not legitimate, they're not right, would be non-violent and victimless crimes.
Well, and that's
if you could be arrested for picking a leaf off of a plant and rolling it up into a piece of paper made also out of leaves and smoking it of your own free will, there's something wrong with that law.
That's another point to bring out there as well, is that, you know, the police officers, they're not there to interpret the law. They're not there to, write the law. They're just there to enforce the law.
No,
they're the executive branch
of government. It's your job as a citizen to push back on your government when they make a law that's not correct, so that the police officer doesn't have to enforce a law that is actually in violation of your rights as a human being.
Yeah, and something as simple as a technicality can escalate into... Let me give you an example. All right, I was driving down a road, minding my own business. I was doing the speed limit. I wasn't speeding. I was using my turn signals. I was doing everything right as a driver. I get an officer pulls up behind me, right? Well, he pulls me over. So I pull over. I'm trying to figure out why this officer just pulled me over, because I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't speeding. Well, he comes up there and he tells me that my tag light's out. The little light that lights up your license plate. Now, keep in mind, in the state of Missouri, in most states, those license plates are reflective. Unless they're completely covered with mud, with the high beams that they got on a patrol car, you can read that doggone deal. So it was just a technicality to stop me. But in the process of this stop, he asked me for my driver's license. He asked me for my proof of insurance, and I gave him proof of insurance. However, the date on the proof of insurance was not good. I told him, I said, well, you know, you could call my insurance agent right now. He'll verify that I'm up to date. I just must have forgot to put the updated paper in my car. And so anyway, he goes ahead and writes me a ticket on the deal. He refused to call up my insurance agent to verify my proof of insurance. And so I get this ticket that took me 2 weeks to resolve. All I had to do was go to the court and show them that I had insurance at the time of the stop, and then it would have been dropped, or they would have, at the very least, only charged me court costs.
Shaziz, in defense of that police officer, if you ask him to call your insurance agent, you just caused him to have to cross, if he does that, to cross over into lawyer and judge territory. And he's not a lawyer or a judge.
Well,
not
Brian, I can understand that now. But
what they need to do is they need to stop charging people tremendous amounts of money.
But my point,
in issues like this, that basically it's not their fault.
But my
point
was, it was a technicality that set in motion these things that it ended up causing me to have to go through the 2 weeks of pain in the neck trying to get to the papers, because it takes a while before that ticket actually gets onto the books, and so
I got a question for you. Have you ever gotten into your car now without checking to make sure your insurance card is up to date?
No. And I always check to see if my tag light's working, too.
So in reality, technically, you were guilty. It was you. It was you that did not put the new paper in your car, not the police officer.
Well, regardless of that, I understand that. I understand your point. But regardless of that, what I tried to point out was it was a technicality that actually invoked the stop.
They could be resolved with no harm to anyone.
Yeah. But
the way to resolve that technicality is to force them to reword that law that states that they have to pull you over if your license plate is obstructed from vision. Not with the taillight being out, that doesn't count. If they can actually see it with their eyes, then they shouldn't need to have a lamp over it, like you were talking about. I mean, that's wasting energy anyway. What's this about the carbon footprint?
Yeah, well, my point exactly.
Burning the headlights so you can see where you're going, so just use them to see the tag light, or the tag.
While he was in the process of effecting a traffic stop on me for a technical violation, there could have been somebody else out there committing a serious crime. So it don't take much to get yourself involved in a situation where you have to interact with the law enforcement. And you know, of course, I'm sitting here, I'm telling, he's asking me questions like, why are you so nervous? Well, of course, that once again goes back to the fact that I got an armed man with a gun out there that I don't know what he wants to do to me or charge me with, or...
You don't even know if he's really a police officer. Yeah. It could be an impersonating one.
So, I'm not trying to make people fearful of the police. I'm trying to make people understand that you do have skills that you can practice, such as de-escalation, you know. If you talk in a calm voice, then they're going to talk in a calm voice. And if they're not talking in a calm voice, you still talk in a calm voice.
Exactly.
Because they are trained to escalate one step higher than what you are, because they have to be in control at all times. And then you get the power freak out there that'll pull you over and start cussing you out. In my book, it should be at least a small offense, an infraction or a criminal offense even for the police officer to use foul language at you, because he's escalating it with his language.
Yeah.
You know?
And that goes back to, if they won't put cameras on these people, there's nothing wrong with you. You, the individual, having a camera in your... I mean, they're so easy to get your hands on now, that's constantly streaming online.
Right.
And you let them know the second they pull them over, they pull you over, you're not just being recorded, you're being recorded and it's being dumped online as it's going. So everything is on the cloud. There's no way to retract it at this point. So please be aware that anything you do, if you do something illegal, the whole world is going to know.
Well, if I see that a police officer is commanding respect by being respectful, I will address him as a police officer, or yes sir or no sir. But if I see that a police officer has went beyond his oath of office and is no longer respectful, I will use my phrases in a way in which I can answer his questions, but not give him the title of yes sir, no sir, yes officer, no officer, or nothing like that. I will just answer my questions with a yes or a no, and not take it any further. But I'm not escalating it into disrespect, you know, like, yo, dude, why'd you pull me over? You know, don't call me a dude, I'm a police officer.
Exactly. You know? Show respect.
So there's ways to show respect.
You can always say, well, actually, I feel like you're a dude because it feels like you're treating me like a cattle.
Yeah,
like cattle. You know, that's what dudes are. They're, you know, they're ranchers.
Well, you know, I've got a lot more to say on this subject. Let's say we take a quick coffee break and music break, and then we'll come back at it and polish off. You're listening to Knights of the Round Table, people. Hope you're enjoying the show. Hope you're learning something here. And if you got some comments you want to put in there, jump over there to shazizradio.com/superchat.html. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to join the Knights of the Round Table, it's as simple as a phone call or Skype call. They're same username. Thomas is hosting the call this time around, so if you want, contact Thomas. All right, everybody, stay tuned. Peace and love. You're listening to Knights of the Round Table.
Turn it up. We'll be right back.
all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble. I have no friends to help me now.
He has no friends to help him now.
Never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps you'll die upon this train.
Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no you on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We've had an interesting conversation offline as well, which we'll get back into in a minute. Some of the best content is in the middle of the music breaks and stuff, so sometimes we can remember some of the things that we were talking about. But so anyway, I posted a video up there that said using Big Brother tactics against yourself, against the police. What the heck is that noise in the background? Somebody working in their mad science lab? All right. So anyway, let me repeat that. Echo. All right, using Big Brother's tactics against... Can somebody, like, kill that?
It's on me.
Raymond, your microphone.
I was getting me some water for coffee. What was the question?
All right, well, I'm trying to get us back into the show.
Oh, okay.
You was echoing, banging stuff around.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was putting ice in the cup.
Oh, you gotta love it. All right, so anyway, I'm going to rephrase this again. Using Big Brother's tactics against the police, cop caught on in the act. So basically what this is all about is not trying to point out, you know, that all the cops are bad, because they're not. You know, not even remotely trying to say that. But what I'm trying to point out is that people's perception of what is going on in the world will define their actions and how they react to certain situations. Now, I believe in full-on self-defense. If there's a potential a cop's going to taser me, I want one of them taser-proof suits that the cops wear so that they don't get tasered. Heck, I want a flak jacket. I want some Kevlar vest. I want some body armor. Because if I got to go out into this world the way that I perceive it, I need to be in full-on armor, like the knight in shining armor kind of thing, you know? So that, you know, whatever somebody decides to throw at me, I can at least survive. And I know that sounds crazy, but if you could understand my past and where I've actually came from and things that I've seen, I've seen things that no man or woman should ever have to see. And I've seen some terrible things. And if you wondered why I'm continuously preaching peace, hope, and love in the world, is because I want to see this world go down a different path than the one we're on. When you can't trust your government, or when governments, or you know, the executive or legislative or the judicial branch of governments are actually overstepping their bounds or even abusing the law to the extent like Thomas and Raymond were talking about, the Obama doing the extreme executive order, and he's making a lot of people mad about it. But, you know, at the end of the day, the person who's in charge of your personal safety is you. The police officers will tell you they're not there for your safety. They are there to enforce the law. They are the executive branches of government. And chances are, if you live out in a rural area, you might be 45 minutes to an hour to maybe 2 hours to possibly never before the police show up because they're too busy somewhere else. And so with that said, you know, the Second Amendment is a good thing to have. You don't want that violated, because if you do need to defend yourself, you need whatever tools that you have access to in order to defend yourself. And so when we talk about the rights, we're not trying to say, like, you know, we're this hardcore patriotic anti-government kind of people that want to, you know, bunker down and get ready to do battle against the government. We're not talking about that at all. We're talking about nipping in the bud, like Barney Fife said, you know. We're talking about the U.S. Constitution being used as the line in the sand that says, look, we all made this a contract, but when we started this country, you know, our forefathers put this down on paper, and this is the line in the sand. If you're going to breach that line in the sand, then you need to go through the proper procedure, such as the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government, to get that resolved to change those laws. Now, in some incidents, they find ways to circumvent that law, such as like saying if you're a felon, then you can no longer own a firearm. Whereas the actual wording of the Second Amendment says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, or subsection A and Article C and the fine print of tiny print D or whatever. It's not like that. It's clearly said. And until that is actually changed, you know, then that should be the ultimate law of the land. And as far as defense, you have the right to be secure in your person and your property. When the police officer stops you and starts asking questions, he is basically infringing on your rights, because now he is fishing for information, because it's been said by the Supreme Court of the United States that it's okay for the officer to use misleading questions. It is also his testimony. Whenever he asks you questions, anything you say and do can and will be used against you in a court of law. And so you need to be understanding of that. That from the time that you are stopped by that police officer, your actions are going to make all the difference in the world of the outcome of that. If you get combative or loud with that officer, he's going to escalate it to the necessary to keep whatever control he can over that situation. And if you know that whatever questions you do answer him, even as harmless as they may sound, they are going to go into report. And whatever is written in that report is by law evidence in court of law. Anything that was said outside that report, if it isn't on paper and documented, it did not occur. And so if you could write your own report up as an incident happens, and you write that up, then it's written down, you've got it dated, and at least you have something to present to as far as facts in your defense. And for personal safety, if they're going to use tactics such as non-lethal weapons, such as tear gas on you, then you should have something that you can wash the tear gas out of your face. You know, you should be able to have something that you could keep the tear gas from ever getting in your face. Or you could have something that would keep you from actually being, have 50,000 volts running through your body, because you're not one that's consenting to having your body violated like that, which shouldn't be justified anyway, unless you're attacking or in the process of doing something that police officer is fully justified and has to stop you.
The question is, when is it okay to rape somebody?
It's not. It's never.
Because if you're having two probes stuck into your body and you're having electricity forced into your body, isn't that a little bit like a penis being stuck into someone and you know,
well,
then being inseminated?
That's kind of a crude example, but
it's a biological way of looking at it. You're being taser raped.
Well, pretty much, you're being violated, you know,
right.
And it hurts. It's painful, you know, yep. And according to the Constitution, cruel and unusual punishment is supposed to be against the Constitution. And there ain't nothing more cruel and unusual than being electrocuted.
Whoa, back up a minute. Muddy has on his YouTube website a video that's running for more than 10 minutes of me deliberately forcing high voltage in my body.
Well, you know, self-infliction is one thing, but to have somebody else...
Okay, now you're cooking.
But now here's the question. Why are you not working for a circus sideshow?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can take extremely high voltage from tasers, and I'm not talking about 50,000 volts. She goes, I told you here a few months back, I just bought 4 tasers that put out 20 million volts, and they hurt like crazy, but only for the length of time they are in contact with your body. The instant that taser is turned off, there is no pain. There's only a memory or a shadow of pain.
Well, see, no pain. One could be like super technical and actually go into the way that you would say that if you so much as make me feel uncomfortable, that's cruel and unusual. All right,
okay.
Now, society has actually gotten to kind of that point where you can be in trouble for saying something offensive to somebody. Some people are politically correct where you can't say anything because it might offend, or you can't have a flag up because it might offend. But where does that line end? You know, they say your rights end where mine begin, right? So as long as you're not harming nobody, as long as you're not causing physical harm to nobody, you know, now it's down to emotional harm and such, right? Well, the lines out there are going to have to be agreed upon by all parties involved if you're going to be governed by the consent of the governed, if you understand what I'm trying to point out here.
Yes, I do.
So, you know, there we go, folks. Look, you know, your self-defense is your right. You have the right to defend yourself. And if I have an opportunity, I'll start my own market of anti-taser shirts because I don't want to be shot with one. And if an unfortunate incident ever occurs, you know, I want to make sure I don't get shot with one. But you got to keep in mind that if they can't taser you to the ground, they might billy club you to the ground. So then you got to figure out a way for that. Before it's all said and done, I don't know if you guys ever seen them red man suits that they use for beating people up and having dogs attack them to keep them.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much what I would have. I'd have me a full-on combat-ready, doggone mortar shell, anti-missile defense system, anti-pepper spray. I mean, this thing would be like Robo Dude in the epic proportions. It'd be something out of the sci-fi, you know. have its own force field to keep anything away from me that I didn't want, you know.
I'm a person, because I speak several languages, I'm into semantics, and I like the way you put it. I would. But yep. You would only if you knew you were a criminal.
No, that's not the case, because there are individuals out there. Let's take the bully, for instance. All right, bully looks for the little scrawny guy, because the bully knows that the little scrawny guy is not going to put up much of a fight, and if he does put up a fight, it's just better for the show, because, you know, he'll knock this guy out that's trying to show him that he's got more power than him. Now, however, There are certain circumstances where that little individual right there, if he's backed into the corner, one of the things that you never want to do is back a coward into a corner, because he will do everything and anything to get away from you.
Exactly.
And so,
never back a coward into a corner.
Yeah, it's not because he wanted to be a bad guy. It's because you forced his hand to such an extent. There's where the doggone Declaration of Independence come in, because they forced the people's hand to such an extent with all the abuse and the usury and the taxation without representation and the violence perpetrated on the people, the illegal searches and seizures and stuff. And people just got fed up, and they said, "Look, we're gonna take this. You know, we're gonna do it the right way. These are the rules. If you don't like them, we go to war. We get this over with. If you win, we'll do what you say. Vice versa, you know." Yeah. You know, it's terrible. We never want it to come to that extent, and that's why I'm trying to point out in this broadcast that I don't want people out there to go out there and do what some of these individuals are out there arguing with the police and, you know, refusing to cooperate with them. Cooperation is one. Bowing down to them is another. You know, you don't have to bow down to these individuals. You can respectfully exercise your rights as long as you know your rights without escalating it with your voice. I told everybody, you're more powerful than you can possibly imagine. Just a spoken word alone is enough to start wars and get you killed.
All right? Yeah, they can stop wars too.
Yeah, you can stop wars.
Stop. It depends on the person and what they say and how they say it.
Well,
that's powerful, very, very powerful.
That's where knowledge comes into play there, you know. If like Thomas mentions all the time, if you don't pay attention to what's going on with your government, if you're not up on your toes, Thomas Jefferson, and it's kind of ironic that Thomas Anderson and Thomas Jefferson could pretty much got the same mindset. It must be a Thomas thing. But Thomas Jefferson said the price to freedom is eternal vigilance. And explained simply, that means you got to keep your eyes open, because not everybody has your best interest at heart.
Yeah. Like I said, it's like breath. You know, you have to keep working to get that breath, to keep getting oxygen into your lungs. The same thing applies to liberty, is that you have to keep working to keep getting it.
Yeah,
it's not just going to come to you.
And sometimes it has to be the hard way. Unfortunately, in worst case scenarios, it comes down to the worst case scenario. And man, like I say to everybody, if there's ever a second civil war here in the United States, neither side will win. We're not talking about a small minority of people. We're talking about a majority of people, of well-armed individuals who, in some instances, the civilians got weapons just like the doggone police and the military got weapons. So if it came down to a full-on conflict out here, a second civil war, this country would be in such disrepair, and it would never recover. There would be no possibility of any side coming out on top. The only possible...
Actually, I think we'd be fine as long as we didn't have external issues. The problem is, if we have a civil war, we will be weak to the outside world, and somebody will invade. We'll have to deal with somebody like China taking over.
Yeah, I was working my way to that. That's when the UN groups have come in there fight out everybody and balance out everything. But the problem is that you got so much hatred and racism that has been pumped out there to the people, and so much distrust of the government. If any country in this world was seriously being stabilized without even knowing it, it's the United States of America. And in some incidents, it's factions of their own government doing it and factions of their own media doing it, with the propaganda and the fear porn and all that kind of stuff. So if it ever comes down to it, you got an every man for himself kind of shoot 'em if you got 'em kind of thing. You know, smoke 'em if you got 'em kind of thing. Because you got every redneck out there, every gang member, every crazy, paranoid, schizophrenic psycho that's going to be pointing guns out the window. You know the Chinese who outnumber us? One time, one of their officers said that the only reason why they ain't out on a ground invasion of the U.S. is because there's a gun behind every blade of grass. Yeah, there's something to be said about that, because that's exactly what it was. And if it's Americans turned against Americans in the Second Civil War, it will be the complete and utter downfall of this country. There will not be any America ever again. It's just not possible, because the weaponry, the insanity, the total everybody's desensitized. Okay, one more point real quick.
Okay.
Back during the World War I, they had military guys that came back from different wars, and they came back with just as much ammunition as they left when they did inventory on their ammunition. They hadn't fired one single shot in the entirety of the war, and somehow managed to come back alive. Because there were morality issues where people were, you know, Christian believing people, or just average good people or whatever, and they didn't believe in taking lives. And so while some of them were drafted and forced into the war, they went in there to fight, and they just didn't have the heart to put another man down. Well, they had to figure out a way in which to train these military guys in a fashion to what they would actually use their firearm. Back in the during World War I and World War II, if you look really close at the weapons medals that people's got pinned on their chest, you'll see that there's a bullseye on there. All right, that's like sharpshooter, or you know, there's different levels of your skill that you get these medals for learning how to be you know, precision shooting or whatever. And these guys were good. They could shoot the bullseye from several hundred yards, and some even farther than that, that were snipers that could actually take somebody out from that. They could hit that bullseye. But when it came down to actually hitting a live human being, they couldn't pull the trigger. So they started training these officers on black silhouettes to desensitize them to actually shooting at the human form. And believe it or not, there are targets out there of children, there are targets out there of women, there are targets out there of men. They're just black silhouettes. But in the person's mind, it, psychologically, you get used to shooting at this target, which is the shape of a person. You're more likely to fire your firearm during a wartime or combat situation than you would be had you never used that. If you was just shooting at the bullseye and you still had your moral beliefs about killing is wrong. So that's one of the ways in which that the governments and the militaries and the police agencies have got it to where your officer is combat ready. Your officer is trained pretty much like the soldier, and he's ready to kill if he has to. If he has to escalate it, which most officers will tell you that that is their worst nightmare, that they ever have to pull their firearm. There are some officers who have went through their entire career with not ever even happened to draw their firearm outside of going to do proficiency test where they shoot the firearms to make sure that they're safe. They don't want to pull their gun on you. They don't want to pull a weapon on you unless they're just a total jerk or a bad cop. And so, you know, there's the difference, folks. You got to understand the difference the way these folks were trained these days. You can put yourself in some serious jeopardy just by your actions, just by the way that you talk and how you escalate that situation.
Well, here's the other thing, too. There might be 200 good cops to every one bad cop, but to the person who's being killed by that one bad cop, those other 200 good cops don't mean a hill of beans, since they didn't stop them from being murdered by that police officer.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. And if the justice
system... That's why it's such a contention right now.
If the justice system sides with them, such as not indicting somebody who the citizens perceive... I mean, we saw this up in Ferguson, Missouri, you know?
Right.
When the indictments didn't come down like the people believed them, they protested and it actually got violent where they were doing property damage. Now the people became the criminals, you know?
Well, the other thing, too, is that you have a potential to push to do something that's criminal and in the police's part, because if they admit that they have a problem, the entire force loses confidence with the populace, and then they're in danger of being attacked by the populace.
Yeah. And
so now you've got somebody who made a mistake and shot someone, killed them,
and the whole police department's going to stand behind them and cover it up to keep from them losing, you know, the appearance among the public themselves as well.
Yeah.
They perceive that as that's, you know, that's bad on them too, not just on the officer that shot the person.
Can I go back, Shaziz, to what you said a little bit, a few minutes ago about a lot of people, a lot of countries would love to attack the United States, but they fear that there's a firearm behind every blade of grass. Now, California has some very strict gun laws, and last year they caught a guy, for some stupid reason, had multi firearms, I mean, like a couple of hundred, and he also had over 200,000 rounds of ammunition. They arrested this man, tried him, convicted him, and put him in prison. And all of a sudden, I got an email from my mother. And it says simply that, duh, in Arkansas, this guy would be considered your bestest hunting buddy. Huh. In Georgia, he would be considered a very eligible bachelor. And in Texas, no problem. He'd just be considered your buddy down the road, a little short on ammunition.
Well, they don't say don't mess with Texas for a reason.
Yeah, go straight.
All right, folks, look. The whole thing about it is, and I want to point out also, Stephen Gibbons put something in there, a mixture of water and biocarb makes a good wash for pepper sprays. Yeah, it's a good, you know, have you something on hand just in case, worst case scenario, you get pepper sprayed. There's all kinds of things out there. I'm telling you, I've been pepper sprayed, and it actually damaged my eyes, literally. It's 3,000 Schofield units of capsaicin. Yeah. And you want to talk about taking your breath away, you want to talk about burn and pain, it don't matter how much you stick your head underwater, it just, it is nightmare. You literally feel like you can't breathe, you're on fire, and it's a miserable, miserable thing to go through. Now, okay, how tough you are, if you get pepper sprayed, you're going to suffer. And so, with that said, you know, defense is key. If you got the potential of being pepper sprayed, you might want to put yourself out of that position and not get pepper sprayed.
Quick.
And if you do get pepper sprayed, you might want to have something on hand if there's going to be a potential.
Neutralize it.
Yeah, to neutralize it, because it sucks. It's terrible.
Well, for one thing, it's an oil that stuff is in, too.
Yeah. So,
which means that water ain't going to do anything to it, because water and oil don't mix. And they don't emulsify.
Somebody also put a comment in there. Anon907 said, I don't know what that was. You're live on air, Raymond. We can hear your telephone conversation. Yeah, the comment said they came out and said that the police have a quota and have to make it so the cops are just doing their job, and they are being told to rob people, and they do because they think it's the best thing. I'm not a very good reader.
I was going to say, for that person to say that they're just doing their job, that's like saying, well, you know, that hitman that works for the mob, he's just doing his job. That's what he's told to do.
Well, when they step,
if you don't want to be a hitman, don't work for the mafia.
Yeah, when they step out of their oath of office and become, instead of servants of the community and become armed revenue generators for the state, then I can't call them officer. I can't have respect for them. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're using the laws the way that they're supposed to be to protect the community, sure, you slow down the speeder that's going to speed through the school zone and, you know, and doing things crazy that's going to get somebody hurt. And I can actually agree to them being fined for such an act, you know. But there is a thing called, what's the word I'm looking at? Doggone it, where you actually have a choice. You can make a decision whether or not you... What's the word I'm looking for, Thomas?
Doggone it. Outside your brain.
Well, it's... discretion. Officer discretion.
Right.
All right, to make the right decision at the right time. You don't have to write them a ticket just because. You can have, say, a warning if the offense isn't so bad that, you know, if somebody's going 55 and a 35, that's ridiculous. All right? If they're
unless they've got a good reason, like, you know, somebody injured in the car and they're trying
well,
to get
yeah,
them
an emergency. But in that instance,
then you give them an escort, you know.
You got to be wise enough to turn on your flashers to let somebody know something's wrong and warn people ahead of time.
Well, provided you're not driving the only vehicle that's around that was actually in disrepair and was sitting, you know, in the yard because it doesn't have working flashers or something.
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of different possibilities, but
like you mentioned, though, it comes down to that discretion.
One of the things,
if the officer doesn't have the ability to be, if they don't have discretion, they shouldn't be an officer in the first place.
One of the things to be aware of is that when police officers, they're there to lead by example. They're there to set a good example, so they should be held accountable. They should be held at a higher standard than the average Joe because of the position that they're in. And so here in Missouri, by law, they cannot break the law, such as speeding, by unless they are in the process of going to an emergency. There's an actual emergency in progress, and they have both, not just one, but both lights and siren activated. Otherwise, if they're speeding, they're breaking the law. Now, if you watch out here, you will see what they call expediting, which are, they're literally speeding up the deal. They're speeding with no lights and siren on, which is putting the public at danger. Now, if you...
I want to say, when you said speeding on there on the road, the first thing, without having a good reason, basically, the first thing I heard in my head was Coltrane and his...
Yeah. Yeah, but see, they're not, they're supposed to activate all safety precautions, such as the lights and siren, to allow anybody to know, hey, there's a speeding car coming your way.
Right. It's loud and it's very bright for a reason, so people can see it from a long ways away, even around the corner.
But you will see simple abuses of power whenever they speed down the highway, no lights and siren, they're just in a hurry to get from one place to the next, and they call it expediting, you know, they're, you know, getting there quickly. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know...
get to those donuts. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Yeah. The scales of justice when they're off balance like that, and your average Joe sees that here's a guy in uniform and a marked police car flying down the road breaking the law. You know, that's where you got to hold these folks accountable, even if it ain't going to do you no good.
Have respect for the law, too, if the people who are supposed to be enforcing it have no respect for it.
Even if it isn't going to do no good, you look up the Missouri statute or whatever town you're in and the laws of regarding police officers using their lights and siren, and you call up their commanding officer and you say, look, you know, the Missouri statute such and such number states that you must have both lights and siren activated while you're in the process of going to a emergency that's in progress.
Turn them in.
And turn them in.
You don't want to do a citizen's arrest?
No. You don't want to go up there and try to citizen's arrest a man with a gun. It's not very bright. All right. Besides that, they don't understand what it is you're trying to convey to them. You know.
Oh, if they can't understand when somebody says, I'm placing you under a citizen's arrest.
Oh, yeah. They're going to laugh at
then
your
face.
They
failed at grade school level education and should not be wearing a badge.
Yeah, I agree.
They're supposed to go to college to even get that badge, so, you know.
But the point is, you have to hold their feet to the fire. You have to hold them accountable by calling them up, even if it's not going to get nothing done, to document it, voice your concern, and get enough calls going into the doggone chief of police or the sheriff's department. And I would call multiple agencies. Say, look, this agency over here, I just witnessed this guy going 70, 80 miles an hour. According to my estimation, because I'm doing 65 and he's passing me like I'm sitting still, has no lights and siren activated, he's endangering the community, and I'd like to report this. I'd like to have an actual report written up about this. And
if you don't do something about it, I'm calling the news.
Yeah, whatever it takes.
We'll see what the entire populace has to say. They see that this is going on, and we keep hearing this popping up over and over again on your local, like, you know, Channel 2 News.
You'll start noticing them slowing down because now the public is paying attention. Before, it's like, hey, I'm a, you know, supposedly my training officer, he ran two stop signs in my local town and he said, you know, F it, I'm the effing police, I'm larger than King Kong. Boy, I just tell you what, I was so sick to my stomach, I didn't even want to be there, man. You know, and this is supposedly my training officer.
Here's the thing, okay? This mentality and this treatment is going to drive people away from civilization.
Yeah.
Now, what would have happened if it was so bad that basically Tesla and Einstein decided not to participate in civilization and went off to work with another group of people for a private civilization?
Well, I think that they would have one little decent part of society going on.
No, we're not talking about society. We're talking about their own civilization, like leaving and, you know, finding an island or something like that.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That.
On that little island,
keeping
it would be better
keeping
than...
it all for themselves. We all go without, you know?
Because
that's what we're facing in our future right now.
The lost city of Atlantis, you know, with all these mystical, cool machines. You know, but the whole point is this, you know, it's up to you, the individual, to ensure your safety when you're out there in public. And if you're under the unfortunate circumstances such as myself, where I'm severely paranoid and I'm claustrophobic as all get out, man. You know, you lock me up in a tight, confined space, and I just can't cope. It's not a good thing. And trying to live with that and then go out into society the way that it's been portrayed to me by the media, I'm not anti-government. I'm not anti-police. I'm not anti-corruption. I'm not even anti-social. I love people. I love people to pieces, you know. But I'm just...
Wait, you just said you're not anti-corruption.
I'm not.
You're not anti-corruption.
Hey, no, I am anti-corruption. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'll get on a roll, man.
I figured you made a mistake there because you just laying it all out there and
then
accidentally got pulled up into it.
Thanks for correcting me. I got, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm just a human being, and sometimes I'm trying to put a message out there. Basically, I'm pro justice. I'm pro constitution. I'm pro, you know, freedom, and I want to see people use wisdom while navigating through this world. The way that I perceive this world from everything I've seen in alternative media, mainstream media, the entertainment society, court systems, the governments, all this kind of stuff, and just people in general, the way that some people act towards each other in public, I am fear to leave my own property. I would rather stay home, locked in my room. It's just me. All right, now I ask you to remind me of something. You remember what I asked you to remind me of earlier, Thomas?
Nope.
I asked you to remind me about how to get out of jury duty.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's a funny story, and it's a true story. Are you there, Raymond?
I sound like he's busy.
Yeah, he's got company, and they're all live on air, so I hope they don't drop the beepers out there. Because Raymond forgot to mute his microphone.
Yes, I did.
Alright, well, now Raymond's back. I'll go ahead and tell you how to get out of jury duty.
Alright.
Alright, now, it is your obligation, according to the way that our system is set up, to sometimes be called a jury duty. Well, if you're so disgusted with the situation and you just don't want to be on jury duty, then you have an episode that happened to me. I get called for jury duty, and keep in mind, by this time, I'm already been affected by the government, the military, the doggone police system, and life in general. And so, when the prosecuting attorney stepped up to the deal and asked me a question, he said, if the jury finds that, by a reasonable doubt, that this person is guilty, could you render a verdict of guilty towards this individual? And I looked over at the prosecuting attorney, and then I looked over at the judge, and I said, Your Honor, I said, I have developed a skepticism against the executive branch of government, and you should have seen the jaws drop. I was sitting around about 30 or 40 police officers, the judge, prosecuting attorney, and the defense attorney, and I said, I have developed a skepticism against the executive branch of government, so for me to say that somebody was guilty, it would have to be evidence beyond a shadow of a doubt before I could do so. And you know, I didn't get selected for jury duty. Now, the defense side, they wanted me.
They wanted you bad.
Yeah, but I got the boot.
Really?
And the cops, you would have seen the jaw. The judge, which is part of the judicial branch of government, her mouth just Yeah, I mean, I swear it hit the bench, and she gasped, and she's like, and they realized what I just said, because the police department is the executive branch of government, and I essentially said I don't trust them because they're corrupt.
So I've
developed a skepticism against the executive branch of government. Those words coming out your mouth will get you out of jury duty.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I did one better, or not better, but as good. They asked me, could you possibly, if there was any possibility this man was guilty, would you vote guilty if you were on the jury? And I said, are you kidding me? I've already made up my mind he's innocent. What'd you say? I've already made up my mind. There's no way I'm going to find him guilty.
Well,
definitely I was out.
Yep, definitely.
Ted, you are excused for your duty.
But mine was respectful and with flair and a little bit of class. I hate to toot my own horn, but that was pretty sweet. I mean,
well, I really, truly, to tell you, to explain, I didn't lie. I had already made up my mind. It was a 18-year-old kid, and in Texas we have an open container law. In other words, if they find an open beer can or whiskey bottle, whatever, in your vehicle, and you're driving, it can be empty. It can be empty so long it has no odor left to it. It doesn't matter if you're tested negative, I mean, blood test, breathalyzer test, whatever, you still get a ticket for drinking under the influence, driving under the influence of alcohol. And to me, that law is illegal.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Therefore, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, they tested the kid, and the officer said that he had no sign of alcohol in his system. But he broke the law in that there was an empty beer can in the back of behind the front seat on the floor. And as far as I'm concerned, that law is illegal, so the kid's innocent. I don't care.
At one point in time in history, it was innocent until proven guilty, but times have shown that nowadays it's more along the lines of guilty until proven.
Guilty until proven innocent.
Exactly.
Guilty until you have enough money to buy your innocence.
Yeah, exactly. That's another thing right there. You just hit another key point on this whole episode. There are individuals out there that got enough money, they can buy themselves out of all kinds of stuff.
Or they have enough influence, like the politicians in some states that have actually gotten laws enacted where they can't actually be prosecuted because they're a politician.
Again, I don't find the statistics, but I have read them, and it's a proven statistical fact that 80% of all of our politicians have are guilty of something, drunk driving, speeding, illegal parking, whatever, and have never, ever paid a fine because they're politicians.
Well, and once again, the way that I feel about police officers is that, they're never around when you need them, they're always there when you don't, kind of thing, is one portion of the issue. But the main issue is that if you are put in a position of power, such as senator, congressman, or president, or representative, or parliament, or whatever.
Pull a congressman bong water on us.
Yeah, pull a congressman bong water. You should be held at a higher standard because of that position. Because that's as far as I'm concerned, right, like the judge, that's supposedly a position of honor, you know. And if the judge isn't acting honorable, he's outside of his oath of office. And if you're not held at a higher standard than the average Joe, and if you can't live your life and lead by example, if you're like a police officer, I got in an issue where I wrote a police officer's wife a ticket. All right, I wrote several tickets that day. And I had an issue where my chief of police was all mad because I didn't call him first because I knew it was a police officer's wife, but there shouldn't have been no difference. The police officer's wife or a police officer himself should be held at a higher standard than the average Joe because they know the law. And so in which case, if they're breaking the law, then they should be held at a higher standard. So if I wrote...
They're willfully doing it.
If I wrote the average Joe a police a ticket for speeding, and then that average, then I get in my own personal vehicle and I go down the road and I break the same law, I'm a hypocrite.
You know, back in Norfolk, Virginia, when I was a teenager, there was a police officer that wrote his mother a speeding ticket.
Well, as harsh as that sound?
He was chastised by the by everybody except private individuals. They held him up as an honor, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unreal. All of the police officers, the city officials, everything, they chastised the heck out of this kid. I mean, he was a young cop. I mean, he was only been on duty for about 3 or 4 years. But he caught his mother speeding and wrote her a ticket.
Well,
they interviewed the newspaper and the television news, interviewed his mother, and she says she couldn't be prouder of him.
That's good. let me be on this guy's side for a second. Let me do the con thing or pro or whatever. When Raymond's mom is driving down the road and she's speeding, I stop her, I write her a ticket. When my mom's driving down the road, I'm kind of fearful of my mom because my mom said, boy, don't think you're ever too old for me to turn you over my knee. And to this day, I'm 50 years old, I wouldn't tangle with mom. But, okay, if I don't write my mom a ticket, but I just wrote Raymond's mom a ticket, the scales of justice just went down the toilet. You see what I'm saying?
A minor problem here, Shaziz. I don't know your mother personally, but I do know her from what you told me about your family. If you didn't write her a ticket, she'd turn you over her knee.
Probably would.
Go.
But I'm just saying, in order to not be a hypocrite, in order to be leading by example, you have to do the right thing. And sometimes the right thing's hard. You know, writing your own mom a ticket, you know you're going to pay for that one, buddy.
You know, over and over, I've told many people, but I've never done it publicly over a radio show like this, worldwide. But personally, I think that if really, truly what they should do is all law enforcement people, they should double their salaries. They should be held responsible. If they break the law, they should get double the penalty.
Yeah.
Because like you said, and you said it three times in the past 2 minutes, they should lead by example. Enforce the law by example. You obey the laws. Just because you're a police officer doesn't mean you get hurt, but you're above it.
One other thing that people don't recognize, they don't realize, is that police officers can be held civilly liable for their own actions. Even if you're criminally charged with something, civilly they can actually be sued for whatever action that they put against you, you know? And in civil court, the burden of proof is a lot less than in a criminal court. So, you know, whoever comes in with the best case wins. You see what I mean? It's kind of like the example of the criminal breaks into your house, trips over a toy, falls down the stairs, and grabs a hold of a railing that hasn't been properly maintained, and he falls across the railing and gets severely injured, and then turns around and sues the homeowner's insurance because he got hurt while stealing.
Right. That to me, that's stupid.
Well, sure it is, but that's the way the system's set up. And
but you know, now, wait a minute. Did you know that if you go into a liquor store or a 7-Eleven or any place and you rob them, now you've committed a crime. Now, as you pull out of the parking lot, the police have already been called. They come up behind you, they turn on the siren, they're chasing you. Did you know that if you're escaping from a crime and you have an accident and you kill somebody with your car, you run over, they run out in front of you, and you run over and kill them, it's first degree manslaughter.
Well, yeah, it's also the same case as if you're part of a, like there's two people on a team, and you don't actually do the shooting, you're still charged with, the same crime.
The thing is, that is a law. That is a law. Now, where is the law that if a criminal is robbing your house and gets hurt, that he can sue you?
Well,
what law is that? There is no law.
It's the difference.
They just do it.
It's the difference between criminal and civil. You know, it's like anything that happens on private property or anything below a certain amount is a civil court case, and it doesn't become criminal. You know, it's like, I don't advocate anybody out there going to payday loans, but if you go to a payday loan place, and by law in Missouri, they're not supposed to accept a post-dated check. It's basically you're using the post-dated check as collateral for a loan, in which they charge you high interest on there. However, if you decide not to pay that, they'll take it to the prosecuting attorney and get you for writing a bad check.
Right.
However, if you write on that ticket that you just write the word loan down there in the description section or the little memo section on your check, Mm-hmm. Now it becomes a civil matter. If they take it to the prosecutor, because it has the word loan on there, that ticket was used as collateral, it's a civil matter. They got to take you to civil court. There's no criminal charges could be pressed against you just because you stated in that memo section that it's a loan. So now it's up to them to go to small claims court and get you to pay back that loan. You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what
there's you're the difference between knowing and not knowing how the law is, and the laws are vast. I would venture to say you could put all the laws in one giant building and still not be able to get them all in there. You know, even laws on the books don't even belong there anymore.
Right.
Such as everybody in Kansas City is breaking the law because it says that you actually have to stop your motor carriage, have a horse-drawn team take your motor carriage from one end of the property all the way across the other end out the city, and then you can start it back up and go on about your business. Everyone driving in Kansas City is violating the law.
Understood.
It's historical, but it's there. You know, and so that's where the wisdom comes in. You know, like I said, I'm not anti-police. I'm anti-corruption. I'm anti- stupidity, anti-lack of common sense. I believe in freedom. I believe in the scales of justice, you know, and the only ones who can actually ensure that our freedoms and our rights are protected is each individual by knowing enough and acting respectfully and doing it within the law, because the moment you step outside the law, everybody else out there will say, oh, he deserved to get pepper sprayed. He shouldn't have been out there hassling the cops. Well, if that was in their position, they might want somebody else to be coming to their defense because they were peacefully protesting and got pepper sprayed. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So yep. There it is, man. So,
you know, Thomas said something earlier about we need to get rid of the corruption and get rid of the illegal laws. The law is a law, but there's many laws out there that are illegal. And when we were off of the air during the break, Thomas and I were discussing something, and I asked him a question, and he never answered me. Well, yes, he did, too. He tried just as we were coming back on the air, and he didn't finish. Why is hemp illegal to grow in the United States? And when he finally did start to answer, he was talking about drugs and smoking and this. That. No, it wasn't. No. DuPont paid over $3 million to lobbyists in Congress to have hemp illegalized in the United States. Why? Because that's when DuPont developed nylon rope, and they knew we were going to enter the Second World War. They did it just before the Second World War, and they dreamed of a major contract with the Navy to supply rope, nylon rope, to the ships. I mean, duh, had nothing to do with drugs, had nothing to do with smoking.
Well, actually, to be clear, I said that they used that as an excuse to get it illegalized so that they could force people to use petroleum products, basically, which is what nylon is. Nylon is a polymer.
Now,
petroleum
the same
product.
Thing happened a few years back when DuPont paid millions of dollars to lobbyists to get Congress to pass a law illegalizing a certain Freon. And they used the excuse that it destroys the ozone. The problem is the congressmen are not scientists. They're not, all they don't understand is law. Freon is heavier than air.
Well, they understand money, too.
Yes, they understand money. The thing is, DuPont had already developed another type of Freon that did not hurt the ozone, and their patent was running out on that other Freon. That's why they want it illegalized, so that nobody else could make it. Duh, it's all about money.
Yep, and Stephen Gibbons posted a comment in the chat room. The common law is not the cause another harm or being harmed or loss in any form, which is simply you don't do no harm. Everything else is a statute, the rules of a corporation. And unfortunately, we found ourselves in a situation to where, like I said, the police officers have literally become, whether knowledgeable or not knowledgeable, armed revenue generators for the state. You used to say serve and protect on the side of the police cars, but it don't say that very often anymore. And so, with that said, when people see the police coming, with all the things that they've been told, from police abuses to government corruption to all the different medias and the music out there that, you know, anti-cops or whatever, you know, and you let half part of the population will be rooting for the cops, the other part of the population be rooting for the bad guy, you know. But that perception, it's all about it, how the individual's perceiving it. You look at your government, you think, my government would never do that, you know. But you're wrong. Governments have been notorious of doing that when they get out of line. You know, the special interest groups, they have a lot of power, a lot of money backing them to get things passed through the Congress and the Senate and actually into law. And those things affect everybody. It may be a stupid law, such as not being able to grow hemp, you know, for industrial purposes. And there's like 50,000 products that you can use or more from the hemp. And so it would be something that would be beneficial for the community. However, it's illegal because of its, you know, native cousin, the cannabis plant, marijuana, whatever. And for whatever reason, marijuana became illegal. You know, back during the Prohibition, when they made illegal liquor, they just opened the black market, because when the people want it, they're going to get it, even if it's under the table. And they opened up a not only a black market, but a whole crime industry. They had revenueers running around busting doggone people with their steals and stuff, you know, moonshiners. And, you know, a lot of stuff was going on. There were literally wars fought over doggone liquor.
Yes, it was.
And they had little places called speakeasies where you could sneak underneath a basement somewhere, and it's like a bar underground, and every once in a while they'd get raided. There'd be kung fu and gunfire, man. You know, drunk against the cops.
Think about this just for a second. During Prohibition, the federal government spent millions of dollars every year trying to control it.
Yep.
When they deleted it and made it legal, they made millions more dollars by taxing it. I mean, come on, man. You know, something like that people want, you don't make it illegal, you make it legal so you can tax it. I mean, come on. They made marijuana legal in Colorado and several other states. Why? Because they figured now we can tax it and we don't have to spend money trying to control it.
Well, I think of it like this. I think as long as alcohol is legal and doing stupid things while under the influence of alcohol, such as driving and getting somebody hurt, should be a severe penalty. I'm sorry, but that's the way I believe. You should not get into a car if you're not capable of maintaining your speed and driving safely. Now, there's some people that could literally drink you under the table and get in the car and drive perfectly safe, but the law has to be equal all the way across the board. So if the congressman gets out there and gets drunk and he gets a slap on the wrist just because of who he is, then that's wrong. The scales of justice are off. You see what I mean?
Exactly. I agree with that 10,000%.
So if you're a public official, you should be held at a higher standard than the average Joe because of the honor of the position that you're in. If you swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, whether you're military or police or government, and you violate that anytime you're stepping outside of your oath and you're acting outside of the law, which is the supreme law of the land, the United States Constitution, then in my view, you're no longer an officer, and I won't address you as an officer if you're disrespecting me, using foul language, or threatening me in any form or fashion. If you're stepping outside of your authority as a sworn officer to uphold the laws and the rights and the people, and you're outside of that office, don't expect me to say yes, sir. Don't expect me to say officer. It's not going to happen. I'll address you respectfully, but you will not get that luxury of the honor of me saying yes, sir, or officer, or anything like that.
I'd like to carry that just one step further. When you said if they're in a person that is to express the law and protect, to enforce the law, they absolutely should be held to a much higher standard. And by higher standard, I don't mean just arrested. I mean they should be punished more severely, because they are in the position to enforce the law.
Yep, so civilly and criminally held accountable for your actions. You know?
Exactly.
Because if the shoe's on the other foot, if you do something so much as touch an officer, you're civilly and criminally held accountable. You will lose money, you will lose freedom, and that's the way it works on the system. But if it's to be, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. It should be equal across the board. If the if somebody who's in a position of power that has the authority, the power to literally take your life if necessary, to take away your freedom, or to encroach on your property or whatever, for whatever purpose, that he's there to enforce the law and gets outside of those bounds of what is right according to the law, then as far as I'm concerned, they should be held so highly accountable that they will put the fear of God in those individuals out there who would follow in their footsteps and try to do the same thing. You see what I mean?
See exactly what you mean.
You know, like I said, man, I can respect anybody out there who can talk decent to me. I'll talk decent to them, you know. But I won't elevate myself to the level of, unless I get so doggone angry I just don't care anymore, I won't level myself, I won't put myself on that level to where even if they're cursing me up and down a storm, I'm not going to escalate it to the extent that it gets so far out of hand that now I release my inner dragon and somebody gets hurt. Whether I'm in the grave or somebody else is in the grave, I don't ever want to go there. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So anyway, that's it, guys. We're down to it. That was a fascinating show and great conversation, great input from both of you guys, both honorable knights of the round table. I'm telling you, I just love it when you guys are on here with me. And you know what? It's going to wisdom and common sense, people. That's the best advice I can give you. When you're interacting with any authority out there, try to do it in the most respectful manner and keep your moral high ground. You know, at least if you do get violated, then at least you know you did the right thing throughout the entire process. I'm not saying lay down and take a beating by any means. But what I'm saying is use some common sense before you allow things to escalate to the point where you got like a second civil war going on in your nation and your children got to go through that. It's not worth it. Nobody will ever win a second civil war here in the United States. I pray to God it never occurs. And nobody's going to win protesting against the police. If you're going to go out there and protest, save the trees, and you got a wooden stick with a paper sign, it's going to protect you.
I like that scenario.
Yeah, so go out there and plant a tree. Do something productive.
That is so cool.
So you guys got anything last to say before we bail up out of here? Thomas?
No, you covered it.
What about you, Raymond?
Oh, all I can say is the same thing I said before. When you're in a bad situation, you be the calmest person in the room,
yeah,
or in the group, and be the most respectful. But don't, like she says, you don't lay down and take a beating. You hold your high moral standards by taking control of the situation, by simply being calm and respectful. That's it. Just keep your calm. Be cool.
Well, folks, my good book says that the meek shall inherit the earth. And, you know, with all that, a little bit of wisdom, a little bit of common sense can go a long ways. If you treat people the first and the last time you see them with respect, then that's what they're going to remember you for. And those positive pebbles that you send out into the pond will send the ripples that can affect our world in a better way. And we will leave behind for our children a better world than what we were raised in. We're going to pave the stones that they walk on into the future. So that's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. If you like this show, please pass it on and let everybody else hear what was said here today. And, you know, come back and say hi, you know. That's all we ask. The platform belongs to you, and I wish you, you know, just use it. All right. You've been listening to Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love, everybody.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't...
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to... Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Hee hee, hee hee, qui chasseuse de turtle. I rise for king, chasseuse de turtle, and the knights of the round table.